Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. This episode is recorded on Monday, November 14th, 2016, starting just after 3 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 93rd episode of the show. For more information about how to subscribe to the podcast and help support the production of future episodes by becoming a patron, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the results of the 2016 U.S. presidential election and reflecting on what happened in terms of the astrological prediction that I made last month. So before we get started, just a few quick announcements about the giveaway that we're doing on the next episode. Our sponsors this month are the NCGR Astrology Conference that's happening in Baltimore this February, as well as the astrology software program called Delphic Oracle. So on the next episode, we're actually giving away a free pass to the NCGR conference, as well as a free separate copy of the software program to two lucky patrons who've pledged their support for the show through our page on Patreon. So the NCGR conference is titled The Many Faces of Astrology, and it's taking place February 16th through the 20th, 2017 in Baltimore, Maryland. It's probably going to be the biggest astrology conference of 2017, and it's going to feature more than 60 speakers speaking on five different tracks. So you can find out more information about the conference at ncgrconference2017.com. And as for Delphic Oracle, it's a full-fledged astrology software suite that specializes in the techniques of traditional astrology. It can calculate every Hellenistic Time Lord system, as well as several different medieval timing techniques as well. It's one of the go-to programs that I've used in my work for about 10 years now, so I certainly recommend it to people. You can find out more information about the program at astrologyxfiles.com. So, if you want to be entered into the drawing for a chance to win a pass to the NCGR conference or a copy of Delphic Oracle, then all you need to do is sign up to become a patron of the show on the $5 or $10 tier, and then the winners will be announced. The winners of the drawing will be announced on episode 94, which is the one after this one, which should at this point be the next forecast episode for December. So for more information about the giveaway and the prizes, see the description page for this episode on theastrologypodcast.com. All right, so with that out of the way, let's get started with the episode and the discussion. So this is going to be a solo show today. It's just me talking about this is basically going to be the third and hopefully final installment of the sort of series that I've ended up doing over the past month or two on the U.S. presidential election. So the focus of this show, I think, obviously, is primarily going to be me talking about the fact that I actually got my prediction wrong about the outcome of the U.S. presidential election last month, and basically to reflect on what happened, to analyze sort of some of the reasons that I've been looking at over the past week about why I called it the way that I did, and hopefully sort of figuring out what I can do better next time. So I'm also going to discuss some things sort of that I've seen in the community surrounding this and some of the reactions that I've seen and things like that, since this is also sort of a broader community issue at this point, to the extent that it seems like, you know, from everything I've seen, that the majority of astrologers actually predicted the outcome of this election incorrectly as well. But this is not necessarily going to be a full meta-analysis of like all of the community predictions and looking at all of the trends and everything with that, just because, you know, I can only speak for myself. And what I want to do here is just sort of outline my own sort of process and sort of journey in terms of this presidential election, in order to have some sort of like accounting and in order to explain what happened. And I can't necessarily do that for every other astrologer, and it would almost be, you know, inappropriate for me to try on some level. So I will mention some community things later, but for the most part, I want to focus on, you know, just what happened with me. This is my podcast. We've heard a little bit about the election, and I think all of my listeners are familiar with some of the things that I've been going through with it over the past couple of months, primarily related to the birth times. So I thought it would be appropriate to have a third show here in order to close things out. Additionally, in 2012, when I was much more into political astrology, ironically, I did a roundup of predictions that were made about the outcome of the 2012 presidential election prior to the outcome. So I collected every prediction that I could find, and I ended up with like 60 or 70 of them. And one of the things that I was surprised to see basically immediately after Election Day is that some of the people who, it wasn't a lot of people, but there was a few people I noticed afterwards who got their prediction wrong, who immediately deleted them. And that caught me kind of off guard at the time. And while, you know, now 4 years later that the shoe is on the other foot, I can kind of sympathize to some extent with what they were going through and maybe the embarrassment they felt or what have you. It still surprised me at the time. And what I'd like to do here is the exact opposite by basically talking very openly and very honestly about being wrong and about what happened and just sort of discuss the process as I'm trying to understand myself what happened and where I went wrong. So I think this is necessary for me as a sort of personal growth and development thing in order to continue to improve my techniques and my approach to astrology, as all of us do. But it's also sort of important as a community to do this collectively and to sort of improve collectively and incrementally when things like this happen in the community. So I want to sort of take the first step. It's not that other astrologers haven't done that, but I'm going to be a little bit more extensive perhaps than some have been just in terms of, you know, fully outlining, as I did before the election, what my process was, but then looking at it after the fact to see where the problems were, or potentially where the problems were. So in terms of my critique of myself, there's three primary areas where things may have gone wrong and where I could have done better, or where there was like legitimate issues with the sort of approach that I took that I want to focus on in this episode for basically the majority of this episode, these three areas. One of the general areas, and I'll just list them very briefly now, and then I'll go into them more extensively later. So the first one is, I didn't take this election seriously enough or put enough time into it. And I'll explain that later. The contrast is basically, I devoted the entire year of 2012 to the political election and making my predictions about that and following up on it, incorporating other data, reading biographies and all sorts of other stuff. But that's not at all where my head was for this election. And I actually announced in 2014 that I was getting out of political astrology altogether and would not be doing it anymore. So what I ended up doing this year was accepting a spot on the presidential panel at the ESAR conference, but otherwise, you know, did not write any articles about this election, did not, we didn't record any podcasts about our actual techniques about the election itself. You'll notice that at really any point this year, eventually we did talk about the birth time issues in two separate episodes and discussed some of how that changed our techniques, but that was primarily focusing on just the new controversy surrounding the birth time issue, or the ongoing controversy, I should say. So one of my issues I'm going to talk about at the beginning was just sort of my not, you know, taking this seriously enough or giving it as much attention as it deserved. The second issue was I based my prediction on speculative birth times, which again is something I was very forward about and very open about. And that's been, as I said, the subject of the two of the most recent non-forecast episodes on the podcast were both entirely focused on the birth time issues surrounding the candidates, and especially Hillary Clinton's birth time, and this issue of not knowing for sure, because we don't have the birth certificate, what her correct birth time definitively is, and the fact that in order to make predictions based on the birth chart, because there were several different conflicting times, at least two or three of which had relatively decent sources, or at least ones that made them seem somewhat plausible, that you had to take them into account as possibilities. The result of that is that in order to make a prediction about the outcome of the election that incorporated Hillary Clinton's birth chart, it required you to base it on a speculative birth time. And that was problematic. And that was something that I talked about as problematic. And Patrick and I discussed some of the issues with that and how that would change our predictions in terms of which the time that we ended up settling on versus what we would have predicted if it was any of the other birth times. And the funny thing about that, of course, if you go back to, I think, the last episode I did with Patrick, is we were pretty straightforward in saying the 8 a.m. time was the only time where we felt like, you know, she could win the presidency, whereas if it was any of the other birth times, they did not look as good, that it looked more likely that she would lose. We ended up going with the 8 a.m. time. And so now one of the points of reflection, of course, that we've been on for a while is, did we use the wrong birth time or did we misinterpret the chart? You know, did we sort of miraculously get the right birth time, but still interpret the chart incorrectly? And that's a point that I'll come back to later. Yeah, and that brings me to my third point. So that really actually is point three, is if I did in fact have the correct chart for Hillary Clinton, especially, and to a lesser extent actually for Donald Trump, which I'll bring up later, did I misjudge the placements? So those are the three areas that I want to talk about and analyze in terms of the three areas of sort of potential weakness that I'm sort of focusing on in my post-election analysis of my own predictions. So some of these issues will apply to other astrologers, and they're going to, they might explain issues that other astrologers ran into as well. In other areas, there may be astrologers that used, you know, different techniques or didn't use the natal charts or what have you, that may have used mundane astrology or horary astrology or something else that would not necessarily be subject to some of these issues. So while some of this may be applicable to other astrologers, for the most part, this is mainly about my sort of private analysis of what happened here in focusing on my own prediction. All right, so first things first, in getting into these three points and unpacking the first and second one, the lingering question that I may not ever know is, did I get the prediction wrong because I had the wrong birth time, especially for Hillary Clinton, because that was the one that I focused on the most, because she's been the sort of known quantity who we've known for a long time now was going to run, and who, you know, she had already run in 2008, and I've been researching her birth chart and her birth time and trying to figure out what her birth time was as far back as 2006, about 10 years ago now. So as a result of that, you know, her chart also became more of the focus in this election. So the lingering question then is, did I get the prediction wrong because I based it on the wrong birth time? And since my type of astrology is so much more tied into the birth time and requires correctness in that area compared to some other people due to some of the techniques that I use that incorporate the ascendant or points related to the ascendant, such as the lot of fortune or the lot of spirit, you know, one birth time is going to indicate eminence in a certain part of a person's life, whereas another birth time might indicate eminence occurring much later in a person's life or might indicate it now. So the birth time actually did make a big difference. And that was why, you know, I've done two episodes about it. And that's why I've been so obsessed about it over the past 10 years, since I knew that any prediction about her winning the presidency would be entirely predicated on using the correct time. So that's one question, is did I get it wrong because I had the wrong birth time, which is something now that I have to question, even though I went into it thinking, you know, I had a chart that I felt pretty strongly about that being the correct time, because, you know, then the prediction that I based, because I based my prediction on that and it turned out to be wrong, I now have to question a lot of the assumptions that I had made or a lot of the sort of premises of the prediction. And that's obviously the foremost one. So did I get it wrong because I had the wrong birth time? Conversely, or did I have the correct time, but I interpreted the charts incorrectly? So, and that's the other half of this that I'm going to spend the later part of this episode talking about, it is there's actually a way in which using the same techniques, I can sort of show you and walk you through how you could have called this election either way, just looking at Hillary's chart and what the specific issue was there. It came down to an issue of the techniques, both the two primary techniques I was using, both indicating a very eminent period in her in her career and in her life, that she would become very eminent during this time, but it also indicated that it would be a very difficult or a very subjectively difficult period. So the interpretation that I ended up going with was, I mean, essentially that it would be a repetition of something like 1992, 1993, which using the perfection technique, as I'll talk about later, this actually literally was. It was 2 12-year cycles ago. So she should theoretically be having a repetition of 1992, 1993, which is a period when Bill Clinton won the presidency and they both got into the White House. And then immediately after that, she took on a sort of job in the White House focusing on healthcare, but then proceeded to have a very difficult year in which she encountered a lot of opposition and in which her efforts to accomplish something were frustrated. So that she had sort of success and eminence in that they got in the White House and she became first lady, but then conversely, she encountered great problems. So my assumption was that because it was a repetition of that year, that she was going to have a similar repetition and basically win the presidency, but then get mired in, you know, opposition and scandals and things like that, was my sort of assumption. However, we were aware, and there was another 12-year cycle prior to the 1992 one, which was 1980. And at that time, basically what happened is she suffered a great defeat and a great embarrassment. And it turned out that that ended up being the one that matched this 12-year cycle more, or more fittingly. But I'm kind of jumping ahead, so maybe I should back up a little bit. But the general point is just that this is going to be one of the most frustrating things about this in the long term, since we're still not even going to know for sure what time she was born. So even the post-election analysis is going to be speculative. And that goes for me, that goes for, you know, most other astrologers who based any of this on the birth charts, especially Hillary's, is because of that ambiguity, we're still not ultimately going to know. So that's why I'm going to try and explore both sides of this in order to see what the possibilities are, sort of whichever direction you go. So I could see it going either way, basically, and I'll outline the reason for that next. So as per point one about not taking it seriously, I basically didn't commit to the election in the same way that I did in 2012. So Patrick Watson and I started the Political Astrology blog, which is still currently at politicalastrologyblog.com, in January of 2009, right after the 2008 election. After the, you know, that was at the time, the 2008 election was pretty wild and got us pretty interested in following politics from an astrological perspective, but also doing it more publicly and trying to collect birth data on candidates and track where we were at with birth data on candidates and get times for when candidates launched campaigns or like accepted nominations for parties and all this other work that usually in the astrological community is done very kind of like haphazardly, or kind of you pick it up from different sources and different pieces, but there's no real like central place where all this information gets brought together and is sort of documented on an ongoing basis. So we started the Political Astrology blog in early 2009, and it was primarily Patrick's, because Patrick is more of the political guy than I am, and he primarily focused on writing articles for that, and it was linked to the sister blog, the Horoscopic Astrology blog, which is primarily where I wrote. And every once in a while, I would contribute articles to the Political Astrology blog, but Patrick sort of wrote it for a few years primarily. Then in 2012, we came back together and partnered up in order to do a whole series of posts on the 2012 presidential election, starting in April of 2012, when we wrote, I mean, we'd been writing it for a few months, but we put together and published our official prediction on the Political Astrology blog for the outcome of the 2012 presidential election in April of 2012, and then proceeded to do a whole series of other articles documenting that election from an astrological perspective, and did some really cool work on that at the time. I mean, Patrick got Paul Ryan's birth certificate during that election. I did a whole piece about the Void of Course Moon issue during the Democratic National Convention and whether the sort of relevance of that to indicating the outcome. We did a lot of stuff. So I ended up focusing on that. Patrick Patrick basically like fell in love and ended up meeting his marriage partner that summer. So he wasn't as focused on the blog that summer as I was. So I basically ended up taking it over and writing for the entirety of the rest of the election for the most part, and was fully immersed in, and just like all I was doing was political astrology for a good 6 months between at least April and May of 2012 and November of 2012. So by the end of it, though, I decided to get out of politics after the 2012 election for a few different reasons. I mean, one of them was it was just too intense. It was too to actually do it properly and to give it my full attention for like the entirety of that year, or for at least, you know, 6 months of that year, was sort of like a full-time job. And it got really tense at different points, and it wasn't my sort of primary thing. I was supposed to be writing my book on Hellenistic astrology still at that point, which I still, you know, I'm only finishing now 4 years later. And part of my ongoing delay is that sometimes I would get tied into sort of side projects like this, like the 2012 presidential election, and sort of do nothing but devote myself to following that the entire time and writing articles about it. So it wasn't sort of my primary focus, so I decided to get out after that. I also sort of became concerned about astrologers being involved in politics and the sort of advisability of that. And by that I mean, historically, when astrologers tend to get involved in politics, it doesn't usually go very well for the astrologers and for the astrological community, because typically during those periods, one or two things happens. Either one, astrology gets co-opted by the politicians or by the people in power and sort of used in order to manipulate people. And basically astrology gets used for political purposes in not great ways. Or alternatively, and sometimes simultaneously, astrology ends up getting suppressed because the sort of people in power don't necessarily like always what the astrologers are saying. And one of the things that sort of came up very starkly at a couple of points in the 2012 presidential election for sort of reasons I don't want to get into, but the end result was I decided to get out of astrology and politics after the 2012 election. And we did one more article on the inauguration chart and the inauguration of 2013 in January of 2013. But then that was it. And we pretty much closed down the political astrology blog, and there has not been another article posted there since. Even though we'd spent for some odd years building that up since 2009. And then what ended up happening is at ESAR in 2014, I had all this great research from the 2012 election that I wanted to sort of summarize and hand over to the astrological community. So that's what I did. And at the ESAR conference in, I believe it was in Arizona in 2014, in September of 2014, I gave a lecture titled What Astrologers Learned from the 2012 U.S. Presidential Election, where I basically summarized most of what I learned and the areas where we were correct and the areas where we were incorrect about the 2012 presidential election, basically partially like I'm doing now, as well as gave some sort of summaries of different things that happen in the community and the way that the areas where astrologers did things right, or in some instances, the areas where astrologers didn't get things right and ran into major issues, or where there was clearly issues with how astrologers were approaching things. And I sort of, you know, summarized that in a 75-minute lecture, at the end of which announced that I was retiring from political astrology and would not be doing it again for the 2016 presidential election, and also kind of urged other astrologers and made the point about my concerns about astrology and politics in the future, and sort of suggested that other astrologers might want to be careful about that as well. So, yeah, that was in 2014. Then about a year later, about 1 year ago, ESAR contacted me because they were planning their next conference, and they invited me to give a lecture at the conference, but then they also invited me to be on the next presidential panel because they were going to do a presidential panel since it was going to be an election year, and it was going to take place in October, or the conference was going to take place in October right before the election. So I was actually really conflicted about this for about a month, and I kept putting it off and putting it off because I didn't want to get involved in the presidential election. But then at the same time, I felt like I shouldn't turn it down. I felt kind of bad to just, you know, say no and to turn down a major speaking position like that, especially because even though I didn't want to write a lot of articles about the presidential election, I didn't want to get bogged down in it, and I didn't want to get in trouble with it. Because the other thing is I had a good sense that this election was going to be more contentious than previous ones. And one of the things that I was concerned about is I did not want to become the sort of target for people who didn't like whatever prediction I ended up making about the outcome of the election. So, at the same time, I was also concerned about the birth time issues with Hillary, but around that same time, in the summer and fall of 2015, a reporter from the Wall Street Journal named Yogita Patel, that I've talked about on the past couple of episodes, she contacted me, and she was researching this whole issue surrounding Hillary Clinton's birth time to try to see if there was a story there and to see if the astrologers were right, that potentially she could be giving out different times with the sort of knowledge that, you know, that she didn't necessarily want astrologers to know the correct birth time. So Yogita was researching this, and she was actually making a lot of progress in terms of finding out that some of the things that we had taken for granted about some of the background surrounding that was not necessarily true. And she was also researching some interesting leads, like, you know, the hospital that Hillary was born in and whether any of those records were available. And she also found out that she couldn't find the supposed Chicago Sun-Times article from 1992 that said that Hillary was born in time for breakfast, which was one of the only pieces of external evidence that we supposedly had, which indicated that she could have been born in the morning. She sort of seemed to find that that didn't exist, but that instead a 1993 Chicago Sun-Times article said that Hillary's mother went into the hospital in the morning, but that, however, Hillary was then born 12 hours later, which then implies that she was born in the evening. So the general point was that around the same time that the ESAR panel contacted me, I was also contacted by this reporter who, you know, really seemed to be on this and seemed to be making good progress in actually finding out what Hillary Clinton's birth time was, so that one of my big concerns about making any predictions about this election might be removed if we were able to get a hold of the actual birth time, and then you could be much more confident about making whatever prediction you would subsequently make. So I basically accepted the invitation to be on the panel, although I sort of did it with the knowledge that I could probably drop out at any time in the future if it turned out that things were looking more ambiguous, or the birth time thing didn't end up working out, or I just didn't feel confident enough to do it. And for a long time, most of that year, I sort of, you know, thought about doing that or thought about dropping out at different points, but then just didn't, basically. So what ended up happening, let's see. So backing up to the birth time issue, I mean, I've talked about the birth time issue extensively. If you haven't listened to those previous two episodes, then you probably should, because I'm not going to be able to give the correct, as much background here as I did then. So I'm going to talk from this point forward, largely assuming that you already have listened to those episodes and understand the issues involved. But one of the things is that Patrick and I had actually issued, you know, we were contacted by a reporter from ABC in late April, early May of 2012. We were completely focused on the 2012 presidential election, but she contacted us asking if we thought Hillary would run in 2016. So it's not really something we were focused on or thinking about, but we decided to pull up her chart. We were still using the 8 a.m. time at that point because we thought that that had the best sort of evidence for it on Astro Data Bank, especially with the statement about the supposed Chicago Sun-Times article saying she was born in time for breakfast. And we ended up making a prediction about that, saying, yeah, it looked like she would run in 2016. We were very careful to say that we were using a speculative birth time that could be wrong, but we said that if it was, in fact, the 8 a.m. time, then it looked like she would be in a very eminent period in her life at that point. So we thought that that did make sense in terms of her basically at least running for the presidency at that time. What's funny, though, is that we were also very careful to say that she would run, but when pressed to ask if she would win, we said, we don't know, because it depends on who her challenger is. Because this is one of the issues that we ran into with some of our techniques. If you look back at the 2000 election or some other elections like 2004, is that sometimes you can have somebody who looks like they're in a very good period, but if somebody else comes along that's in a much better one or a much more eminent one, they can end up being the victor. And we were very aware of that. So if you go back and look at, you know, like this weird interview I did where I was actually on Fox News, on Fox and Friends, and was interviewed by Gretchen Carlson, you'll hear me saying we're using the 8 a.m. time, but if the chart is wrong, then our prediction could be wrong. And then her pressing me to say, you know, do you think she's going to win then? And I said, we think that she's going to run, but we're not sure if she wins because it depends on who her challenger is. And actually, I'm just going to play the audio of that interview here right now, because I think since it's for the purpose of commentary and sort of education, that I can do that within the context of free use laws. And I think it would sort of make the point, rather than just the synopsis that I just gave, it would make that point a little bit better. So here's the actual audio from the Fox News interview from early May of 2012.
As the 2012 election heats up, speculation continues to stir over the future of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. So what will happen with Hillary this year and beyond? Our next guest says it just might be written in the stars. Astrologer Chris Brennan is my guest now. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Now, I understand that there's something between Aquarius and a Leo period. Explain to me how that relates to Hillary Clinton and whether or not she's going to run for president.
Sure. So what me and my friend Patrick Watson looked for was just repetitions in Hillary's life when she did important things career-wise or politically, and a certain sign of the zodiac was often activated, and it happens to be coming up again in 2015. So we think that that means that she will run again.
So you went all the way back to sixth grade when she ran for student government president. She was in the same Aquarius period, so that means since she won that, she might win the presidency in 2016?
No, we didn't necessarily. We don't know if she's going to win the presidency because we don't know who her challenger is, and it's very much dependent on that. But we do know that because she's repeating the same periods again that she always reaches during important political moments, that she probably will run again.
So what do you say to the people who say that they don't believe in any of this at all, specifically because you don't have her exact time of birth, which is critical when you do these kinds of analysis, right?
Yeah, it is. That was a big problem during the 2008 election. We didn't have Obama's time for a very long period, but we're pretty sure, and we have a pretty good source, that this is the correct time. Now, of course, if Hillary's birth certificate is released and all of a sudden we have a different time, then it certainly would invalidate the prediction, but we feel pretty good about it.
Let's go on back to 2008 when we had John McCain and Barack Obama. What did you see in their signs then?
In 2008, once we finally got Obama's birth certificate in June, there was a group of astrologers at a conference who unanimously predicted that Obama would win. So most astrologers, once we actually had Obama's certificate, were pretty sure he would win.
So do you base it completely on astrology or on things like, let's say, the economy?
No, I'm an astrologer, not an economist, so I don't really have much to say about economics.
Okay, and I know that you're predicting that President Obama will be the winner again in 2012 based on astrology. Chris Brennan, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up next, another...
So, that's part of the backdrop of sort of the birth time issue briefly. You know, outside of those two other like 2-hour episodes that I've already done talking more extensively about it. When it came to this year, my plan is, as all podcast listeners know, is that I was going to be focused on the book, and I was planning to spend like the first 3 or 4 months of this year basically writing my book and not seeing any clients. And then hopefully that would be finished and I would have the book out in time for the ESAR conference. And at some point in the summer, I would pivot and turn to the presidential election and start focusing on that. Instead, what happened is I ended up focusing on the book all year and basically writing it all the way through October, when the ESAR conference took place in mid-October. So I only stopped writing about a week, maybe 2 weeks tops before the panel. And what happened at that point, unfortunately, is right about that time is when ESAR then released its announcement about the 218 birth time. And I spent basically the next couple of weeks trying to research the 218 birth time for Hillary and trying to figure out where it came from and how reliable the source was, and trying to, you know, even to just force ESAR to release it ahead of time, because at first they were saying they got a birth certificate time for Hillary and they weren't even going to release it until the day of the actual panel, when we had to make our predictions, and even forcing them to release it eventually ahead of time, about a week before the conference, took a lot of work, as I talked about with Patrick on the last episode. So basically, one of the things that I'm still a little annoyed about and resentful about is that I spent the next couple of weeks, when I finally did finish the book, I finished the first full draft of the book, I put it aside and I sent it off to my editor and to a few friends to review. I sat down to pivot to the election. I then spent the next couple of weeks basically messing with what ultimately likely turned out to be a bogus time to begin with, to the extent that it was eventually retracted. And that kind of still bothers me, additionally, because, partially because it was a distraction from paying more attention to Trump's chart and other sort of related charts that I could have been looking into. But it's also annoying because, you know, it's like ESAR still has not informed its membership that the time was retracted, that the birth time was retracted. And so I don't even know if some of the panelists even, many of them know at this point, but I know there's at least one or two of them that ended up using this 218 time. So, you know, one of the things is that if people are starting to, not point fingers, there was actually a lot of finger pointing that occurred like immediately after the election took place. And I think ESAR panelists often, because it was one of the most recent things and because it got the most press, I think of many astrological predictions, a lot of people immediately were like, you know, what the hell, ESAR panelists, why did two panels of ESAR astrologers, you know, make this prediction unanimously about Hillary a month before the election? So one of the things I do want to say in terms of learning from our mistakes and going forward from here is that I do think that ESAR bears, and the people involved in the birth data controversy, does bear some responsibility for the way that they used the birth data as a PR device in order to promote the conference, rather than immediately making it publicly available and being open and forthright about sharing it with everybody, so that we could immediately begin analyzing it and trying to determine its validity. And some of us would have figured out very quickly and known right away that it potentially was a false chart because of the sketchy source. So I realize that there's still going to be some people that defend the 218 time, and that's fine. And to some extent, I mean, one of the ironic things about the 218 time is that when I looked at it, what I said about it is that it worked pretty well for showing Hillary's career in the 1990s, especially when Bill Clinton was elected president in 1992 and 1998, as well as for when she got in the Senate in 2000. But the problem is I'm not sure if that matters, because it never had a legitimate source to begin with. And in terms of the fact that it came from somebody who was claiming, or originally at least in 2005, when it was originally proposed by Zane Cohen, that it came from somebody who originally said that he had the birth certificate and that he would make it available to people, but then later said that he wouldn't make it available. And then he said that he was like a secret agent that worked for like a spy service. And then later he gave out different times and said that, you know, the time was actually this, or that the time was actually this. And he ended up promoting three different times, even though he said that the original was from the birth certificate. I mean, it's really obvious to, I think, a lot of data collectors that that's not a reliable source to work with. Even if you feel like the chart works well to some extent, that if you put that up against some of the other times that are possible and look at what sources they have, that it's better to rely on ones that at least have some sort of legitimate source rather than just some guy that seems to be kind of shady. So anyway, it was one of the issues with this election that I hope we learn from it is just that was definitely the whole debacle and sort of fiasco surrounding that was not handled very well by the people involved in it. So returning to the birth data question, or sort of focusing a lens on that, part of the issue, of course, that I've talked about extensively already is that there are multiple possible birth times for Hillary. And I actually, one of the areas where I could have gone wrong and that I need to entertain seriously at this point is that I used the birth time that was the exact opposite of what she told me in person. And this is based on a rumor. It's partially based on a rumor that she gave out false times, which, as I explained in one of the previous podcasts, that Frances McAvoy had told me back in 2007 at a conference. She had tried to say that she had it on good sources, supposedly, that Hillary had a reading once using the 8:02 or 8 o'clock time, and somebody told her something negative about Scorpio rising. And from that point forward, she didn't want people to know that that was her rising sign. So that sort of rumor that I heard from Frances seemed to be almost confirmed only to the extent that it seemed to be that there were then multiple different times floating around for Hillary, including different ones potentially from Hillary herself. Like you had the one where she told a chiropractor that she was born at, that she had Leo rising, which would make her born around probably not long after midnight. She told me in person when I asked her at a book signing in 2014 that she thought she was born around 8 o'clock p.m., which would give her either late Gemini or early Cancer rising. So the question then is, you know, was this true? Was this rumor true that Hillary was giving out different times or false times deliberately, or did I sort of fall victim to a false rumor? As I've sort of lamented for years now, unfortunately, Frances McAvoy, who was one of the original people who alleged this, died in 2008, I believe, in December of 2008. And so I never got a chance to follow up with that, to ask her or to sort of judge where she was coming from with that or how reliable it was. So this is one of the areas where I might have gone wrong, in addition to the fact that, you know, just straight out, even all other times aside, if you just take the 8 a.m. and the 8 p.m. time as the two possible ones, the fact that Hillary herself told me that she was born at 8 p.m. and I used the exact opposite time, you know, that certainly leaves me open to criticism in terms of whether ultimately that was the wrong move to make and whether I should have then based a prediction on that, on something that's so ultimately speculative. So my rationale, of course, for that at the time was that we felt strongly enough about the 8 a.m. chart to do that and to make that sort of prediction based on the way that it described her and based on the way that some of the timing techniques worked with her chronology. So the possibilities I want to entertain here is there's two of them. One of them is that I totally misjudged that one and used the wrong birth time, at which case I have no idea what the correct alternative birth time is, because both the 8 p.m. time and the Leo rising time, which would be about 12:30 or something at night, both of those have reasonably good sources. The 2:18 time, of course, it's true that we have to then reanalyze that, but it's also true at this point that it still doesn't have a good source. So it's not one that you would otherwise look at, because it's basically just a rectification probably that some astrologer has proposed and that a number of astrologers took seriously because the guy who proposed it claimed it was from a birth certificate, but then refused to produce the birth certificate. So you could say that we should re-entertain the 218 time. I'll grant that to some extent, but I'll still say I still don't think it's super reliable as a source based on where it comes from and what we know about that source. So the other alternative that I also still want to entertain, though, is I'm actually not fully ready to uncommit from or to drop the Scorpio rising time, because the other alternative possibility that also has to be entertained is that that still could have been the correct time, but I could have interpreted the chart incorrectly. And I mentioned very briefly something about that earlier, but I'm going to get into that with more detail later. But before I do, there's one additional complication that I want to talk about that, you know, I don't think it's being talked about a lot, but I think this one's actually could be potentially just as important, or at least close in terms of its importance for some astrologers. So, you know, I need to immediately, obviously, when I'm dealing with a speculative time for Hillary and my prediction about it turns out to be wrong, I need to analyze whether I was using the wrong time for Hillary. However, the next question, the second actual follow-up question that needs to be asked at this point that I knew basically immediately that night that I needed to ask is, was I even using the correct chart for Donald Trump? And this is a question actually that I realize is going to be a lot more controversial at this point, because there's been this community-wide sort of assumption about Trump and about, that we're definitely working with the correct chart for Trump, based on, you know, our sort of perceptions of him and many of the things that he's done over the past year. However, one of the things I want to bring up and I want to point out at this point in this discussion and in this analysis of, you know, what went wrong from a natal standpoint primarily, is that there's actually three potential birth charts for Donald Trump. They're all very closely related and all very similar, but they are three distinctly different charts. So here's what they are. So the issue is this. In AstroDataBank, if you look at the source notes, the original birth time that was reported for Donald Trump was exactly 9:51 a.m. from Donald Trump's, reportedly from Donald Trump's mother. So what it says in the, let me read you the source notes from AstroDataBank, because it's kind of important in terms of making the point that I'm trying to make. So it says, in the previous entry for Donald Trump in the source notes on AstroDataBank, it says, previously rated as A data from memory, and he had a birth time of 9:51 a.m. with the following source notes. LMR, who's one of the major data collectors on AstroDataBank, or who used to be, quotes a private source who obtained the data from his mother, confirmed by another astrologer who said, quote unquote, he laughed, then called his mom. So that means one or two other sources prior to when we started using the current birth time, at least one, if not two other sources had gotten an exactly 9:51 a.m. birth time from Trump's mother. And one of them evidently was somebody who actually had a conversation with Trump where Trump laughs and then, you know, calls up his mom, and then his mom says 9:51 a.m. So this is important, and I'm bringing this up because then what happened was the current birth time, or the second birth time that one could use for Trump, is 10:54 and 0 seconds a.m., which is what was recorded on the birth certificate, 10:54 a.m., which is just over an hour later than the birth time that was previously used for Trump. So the first birth time from his mother, which is 9:51 a.m., it gives 17 Leo rising. So it's still a Leo rising birth chart. It's still largely the same chart, but it's important to note that the time that everyone's used for the entirety of this election is an hour later than the one reported from the mother, and it's 10:54 a.m. and it gives 29 degrees and 54 minutes of Leo rising. So basically the last degree and the last few minutes of Leo rising. And where this is coming from is supposedly the birth certificate, because what happened was one of the things that Trump did starting in 2010 and 2011, when he started getting geared up to run for the presidency, is he started reviving the birther controversy with Obama. Because if you remember, the birther controversy about whether Obama was born in the United States and was eligible to become president actually started in 2008. And that's why he released a version of his birth certificate in like June of 2008. It's because the birther controversy was already in full swing at that point. But then he releases the birth certificate already, you know, during the 2008 campaign in June. And while it kind of lingered for a little bit longer, like maybe another year or something, or at least there was still lots of people who that was left as sort of like a talking point or whatever, like something that some people in the opposition, people who are opposed to Obama, would say occasionally, it largely, I felt like, was a dead issue for at least a year or two that wasn't being talked about a whole lot, until suddenly in 2011, Donald Trump revives this issue and like makes it his personal mission to get Obama to release an original copy of his birth certificate, or what's called the long form birth certificate. Anyway, so that's a digression. But the point is that one of the things that Trump did during that process, supposedly, is that he released his own birth certificate. But what's weird is that there was like I don't want to misspeak here, but my impression was that in looking at this last summer was that there was three different versions of Trump's birth certificate that were floating around online. And so one of them did list the birth time, and it said what everyone's been using over the past year, which is 10:54 a.m. So I'm bringing that up only because, you know, because I got it wrong, I'm going back and looking at everything and trying not to make any assumptions, because part of the issue that I ran into was with this election is that in some instances I was making assumptions about things, but in other instances, you know, I always try to advocate, like when researching Hillary's birth time, that you don't make any assumptions, that you try to go back and you research all the sources and then you try to get to the bottom of things as much as you can. So one of those things here just involves simply noting that it's weird that while this does happen, it's actually pretty common for the mother's memory to be off. It's weird that the mother remembered it as 9:51 a.m., but then later on the birth certificate that Trump released, you know, sort of in the lead up to the presidency, that it was an hour and a few minutes later. So it still gives the same rising sign. It still looks largely the same. I mean, it does actually change some things with his zodiac releasing periods and with exact transits to the angles and secondary progressions and things like that. So it would make some difference. I'm not going to say it makes a huge difference, but it's something to consider as a possibility that I didn't see any discussion about this, because basically a year ago is about the point that everybody started paying attention to Trump in the summer of 2015. And at that point, everyone focused on that we have a birth certificate from him, supposedly, even though there's three different versions of it, and it says 10:54, and then people cast the chart and it had 29 Leo rising with Mars conjunct the ascendant in Leo. And everyone's like, oh yeah, that's obviously, you know, the chart. And that was sort of the end of the discussion. And to be fair, that was my reaction as well, for the most part, initially. But this is where things get complicated. And this is where I think there is a problem with that reaction. Because everybody assumes that was the correct reaction, that he has Leo rising with Mars conjunct the ascendant due to his personality and due to his appearance. And that may have been a mistake because of the third possible time that we have to take into account. And this is the one that I'm considering much more seriously, or that I'm actually for the first time looking at much more honestly, and that I wish that I had taken more seriously previously. So, and here's the third time and the third issue. if you take Donald Trump's birth certificate and you just read the birth certificate, it says he was born at 10:54 a.m., right? So that means 10:54 a.m. in that minute. But the problem with that, and this is something that Astra Data Bank sometimes notes because it can become an issue, which is that if something's listed as at 10:54, what second does that mean that the person was born in? Because the ascendant can change in some instances within a 60-second time frame. So if you record 10:54, then most people are going to cast the chart and assume it's right at the beginning of that minute, and they'll write it as it'll be entered into the program essentially as 10:54 and 0 seconds a.m. And if you do that, like most astrologers have, then it gives Trump 29 minutes and 54 or 29 degrees and 54 seconds of Leo rising. However, the problem is that at 10:54 a.m. and 23 seconds into that minute, the ascendant switched into Virgo on the morning of Trump's birth. So the problem is that in terms of the actual recorded birth time, because it says 10:54 a.m., and it does not say what second it was, if it was in the first half of that minute, let's just say hypothetically, or if it was in the second half, using that recorded birth time, Trump could have either Leo rising or Virgo rising. And for some people like who use, well, I don't want to downplay that. I mean, I was going to downplay that a little bit by saying for some people who use quadrant houses, that's not a huge deal, but that's not even necessarily true because it does, even though it doesn't majorly shift the chart, it does change the ruler of the ascendant. But for somebody like me using whole sign houses, basically anybody who uses whole sign houses, that's a huge shift whether he has Leo rising or Virgo rising, because it changes not just the ruler of the ascendant, but it changes the rulers of all of the other houses, and it also changes all of the other house placements. So this would make a major difference if he was Virgo rising. Now, I know probably like 90% of you who are listening to this right now are probably having like a very negative reaction to me even suggesting that Trump has Virgo rising instead of Leo rising, because it's something that we all have taken so much for granted over the past year. Whether you're a supporter of him or whether you're not a supporter of him, pretty much I think a lot of people are on the same page, assuming he has Leo rising. The problem that I would raise here in defense of Virgo rising is a possibility that I think we need to seriously entertain. So I'm not saying you have to commit to this. I'm giving the sort of devil's advocate reasons for why we should at least entertain it in a way that I was not fully willing to over the past year. The problem is that even if he had 0 degrees of Virgo rising, he would still have Mars in Leo, pretty closely conjunct the degree of the ascendant within just a few degrees, within a reasonable orb that I think most astrologers would accept. So my point with that is that even though many people's primary criteria for accepting the Leo rising chart is that it seems to make sense that he would be Leo rising with Mars conjunct the ascendant or sort of quasi in the first house, so that it's sort of descriptive of his personality in some way, you would still get that basically with 0 degrees of Virgo rising. You would still have somebody who has Mars and Leo conjunct the degree of the ascendant, and thus that would still color his character and his personality. So the point that I'm making here is that it's actually extremely difficult especially if you're primarily basing that on a personality basis or on an appearance basis, it's actually extremely hard to tell the difference between somebody that has, 29 Leo rising and 0 Virgo rising if Mars is still conjunct the degree of the ascendant either way, which it would be in terms of degrees. So this becomes an issue for me in terms of my prediction about the outcome of the election, because he actually arguably has a better chart with Virgo rising. And over the past week, as I've sort of looked into things more, as I've attempted to start looking into things, that's one of the considerations that really struck me that I felt like I've had to take much more seriously. And what's funny about that is there was a brilliant sort of like omen or sort of personal like omen about this for me about a year ago, which I did not pick up on and which could have given me a heads up, but I did not pay attention to at the time. And it was this exchange I had with an astrologer back in September of 2015, right about the time that Trump started becoming more prominent. So I want to give a shout out to just an astrologer who friended me on Facebook named Blake Gorley, who he basically messaged me. I think he might be a listener of the podcast. I'm not sure. But regardless, he added me on Facebook at some point, and he messaged me on September 10th of 2015. And he said, "Have you looked at the possibility that Trump has Virgo rising instead of 29 Leo rising?" And pointed out how this would change the rulers of the houses and other things like that. And this was in early September of 2015, and he had recently really become more prominent in the news, but it wasn't necessarily for good reason. I mean, it depends on your perspective, but it's like there had been a bit of controversy recently surrounding him because of some comments that he had made, and it was around the time that transiting Mars and Jupiter were making their conjunction in the later parts of Leo, and, you know, in the Leo rising chart would be around his ascendant, or in either chart would be around his Mars. So what I said to Blake, and I'm gonna quote this because it's really funny reading this in retrospect, and there's a lot of things like this that are really funny in retrospect, of course, but this is what I wrote back to Blake when he sent me this message asking about the Virgo rising chart and if I considered it and if I thought, I mean, he was saying, "I think this might be the right chart. People should be taking it more seriously." And what I said was, quote, "I don't know. I use whole sign houses, and the recent transits of Jupiter and then Mars through that sign, through the sign of Leo, seem to line up pretty well with what I would expect first house transits by those planets to look like." So I was referring to some of the recent, both the sort of positive things with Jupiter going through there and him suddenly launching a presidential campaign and having a bit of success with that and getting press, but then also the Mars transit through that sign and him getting into issues for some of the comments that he was making about, I think, like Mexican immigrants and things like that around that time, or about Muslims and other things that he was making in August and September of 2015. So, yeah, so I go on and I say, "I don't know, quote unquote, I don't know enough about his life or chronology to say for sure, though," because at that point, I honestly didn't. I had not researched Donald Trump's life or chronology, and I was not really that focused on the astrology of the presidential election at that point. Right about that time, I was probably trying to decide whether I should even accept the presidential panel, and I was sort of idly following some of the stuff with the presidential election, but it was not really my focus at that point. So I said, quote, "I don't know enough about his life or chronology to say for sure, though. I would say," what I continued, and I said, quote, "I would say that if he drops off the face of the map in the next year, then that argues more for the Leo rising chart, while if he becomes even more prominent over the next year, then it argues for Virgo. I guess we'll see what happens." So that was my response to Blake when he's suggesting this Virgo rising chart. And so he writes me back, and he basically says, I mean, he's a little disappointed in my response, and he says he felt like people were focusing too much on personality by focusing on, you know, the late Leo rising with Mars conjunct the ascendant chart rather than looking at the rulers of the houses. And so my response, I responded to him and I said, "It's not so much his personality that I had in mind." I said, quote, "It's not so much his personality that I had in mind, but just the fact that he was enjoying a period of popularity while Jupiter was moving through Leo, and then that took a hit when Mars entered the same sign. So it has more," and I keep the quote keeps going, I say, quote, "so it has more to do with recent events." And like I said, if it turned, quote, I keep going, I said, quote, "and like I said, if it turns out that he becomes even more popular in the next year, then I think that would be a good argument in favor of Virgo rising. But then if he doesn't, then it would be an argument that Virgo rising, the Virgo rising chart was wrong." So I go back to this because this is an exchange that took place, like I said, in like September 10th of 2015. And it's one of those exchanges that you have that that I wish that I had taken more seriously at the point when it mattered. And the point when it mattered was in that 2-week time frame prior to the ESAR conference, when I actually started paying attention to the astrology of this and trying to, you know, figure out what the outcome of the election would be so I could get up in the panel and make my first, my prediction about it. So other miscellaneous things. So, and this is sort of stuff that I've just come up with over the past week in terms of trying to consider whether it's possible at all that Virgo rising could be correct. There's a few other reasons I'll just throw out there sort of randomly that the Virgo rising chart could make more sense. One of them, one of the most important actually, is that the Virgo eclipse that just took place in September would have been in Trump's first house using whole sign houses. So that makes a really big difference. And the reason that makes a big difference is because then that would be the same as what Obama had in 2008 when there was an eclipse in Aquarius in his first house. And that actually ended up being, we were looking back on that in 2012 and 2008, and that was one of the primary indicators for Obama's win in the presidential election of 2008 and 2010, because what happened is that Obama had an eclipse in his first house in 2008 that indicated his win, and then he had another eclipse 4 years later in his 10th house, which indicated his win in 2012. So when you see that the that you know really major a Virgo eclipse, it was a solar eclipse that took place on September 1st of 2016, just a couple of months ago, having Trump have Virgo rising rather than Leo rising using whole sign houses changes that because it puts it in his first house rather than his second house, and then makes a much closer analogy to, for example, what, you know, Obama had in 2008. So I realize that some quadrant house people are going to say, you know, that it would have been in his first house anyway from quadrant houses, so that, you know, that could just be a shortcoming on my part for using whole sign houses. Nonetheless, and I realize that you can make that argument, so I'll grant that and not even argue that point. But nonetheless, from a whole sign perspective, to me, that's still at least one small argument in favor of the Virgo rising chart rather than the Leo rising chart. Part of the reason for that is that eclipse gets compounded by another point, which Patrick Watson pointed out to me in passing. We haven't talked a lot over the past week since this happened, but we did exchange a message yesterday, and he pointed out, I was actually kind of not surprised, but I was kind of heartened to hear that he might be thinking along similar lines recently, because one of the brief things that he said to me, he said, you know, Trump, if he had Virgo rising, then that would have changed his perfections, and he would have been in a Cancer perfection year. So the sign Cancer would have been activated this year, and thus the moon would have been activated as the ruler of the year, rather than the Gemini perfection year that we thought that he had been in using the Leo rising chart. So that's one of the other differences that I need to point out in terms of why this would make such a huge difference for me, is that it's not just that in whole sign houses, him having a different rising sign or a different ascendant degree, why that would change all the house placements, but it would also change some of the core timing techniques that we're using, such as annual perfections, because with annual perfections, you start from whatever the rising sign is, so the sign that contains the ascendant, and then you count one sign per year for each year of the native life to from birthday to birthday, and whatever sign you land on gets activated that year, as well as the ruler of that sign becomes activated and becomes more potent for the entirety of that year, both in its natal placements and in its transits. So what Patrick was pointing out, which I had also noticed, was that if Trump was in a, if Trump had Virgo rising, then it's not just that that solar eclipse in Virgo in September would have been in his first house, but it also would have been activated as even more important because he was in a Cancer perfection year, thus activating the moon. So it would have been activating that eclipse even more and made it even more potent in his first house. It also would have activated his natal lunar eclipse, where he was born with the sun in Gemini and the moon in Sagittarius, very close to the nodes. So he was born very close to an eclipse at the same time, and his moon would have been much more potent this year than in other years. On top of that, I mean, the other ways in which the Virgo rising chart, from my perspective, make Trump's chart more eminent are that it moves, using whole sign houses, that lunar eclipse that he has in his chart from the 11th house, 5th house axis, it moves it up so that the sun is in the 10th house and the moon is in the 4th house if he had Virgo rising. So it makes his luminaries more eminent. It also brings a bunch of the 12th house planets that were, you know, in Cancer in the 12th house in the Leo rising chart and the Virgo rising chart, it moves them up to the 11th house. Jupiter, very interestingly, which would be, because he has a day chart, would be the most positive planet in his chart, would move from the 3rd house to the 2nd house in the Virgo rising chart. So, you know, Trump, who you know, one of the main things that people think of him is just about his wealth and about his, you know, financial success or what have you. If it was the Virgo rising chart, he would be somebody who would have Jupiter in a day chart in the 2nd house, which would just be a very, you know, blatant positive indication for financial matters, all other things aside. Let's see, what else? With the Virgo rising chart, he'd still have one of the interesting overlaps is that in the Leo rising chart, he has, with whole sign houses, he has Leo rising and the sun in Gemini in the 11th whole sign house. In the other chart, in the Virgo rising chart, he would have Virgo rising and Mercury in Cancer in the 11th whole sign house. So one of the weird things is that either way, using either Leo rising or Virgo rising and using whole sign houses, he's going to have the ruler of the ascendant in the 11th house. I do think it works out a little bit better if Mercury was the ruler. And some of the interesting things, I can see an argument where one could make that. And one of the interesting things is that it also becomes the ruler of his 10th house at that point. One of the things that's curious about that is then the, you know, the Mercury-Neptune square that is already very prominent in his chart between Mercury in early Cancer and Neptune in Libra is that becomes much more prominent in the chart if Mercury is both the ruler of his ascendant and the ruler of his midheaven. It makes him a much more mercurial type figure. And the Mercury-Neptune square itself, while becoming more prominent, obviously that can be both good and that can be bad. Just like, for example, Obama's. Obama also had a Mercury, or has a Mercury-Neptune square. So you can sort of see both sides of that, where on the one hand, that can be very positive in terms of, you know, when people have that, especially politicians, sometimes it can be inspiring or the people that they're speaking to, it can come off as more charismatic to them and more inspiring or uplifting in terms of whatever their ideals are. And that's actually kind of, it's fascinating on one level, because that's one of the things that Hillary was sort of criticized for in the like post-election analysis, the point of her not being as sort of charismatic or inspiring on some level is something that she's being sort of criticized for. So positive end of the spectrum, of course, Mercury-Neptune can be inspiring and can put in sort of positive feelings with people or be able to convey that through a person's speech. Obviously, the flip side of that can also be Mercury-Neptune can have a tendency towards deception or to being able to use speech in a way that, you know, conveys something that the person wants to convey, but it can be more illusory in some sense. And yeah, so it's like one of the difficulties here is I'm tried to, and in most of my sort of analysis of different things, there's this desire to stay sort of politically neutral in my analysis. So one of the things I want to do in that process is basically, anytime I'm going to offer some sort of interpretive statement like that, that ends up being partially a value judgment, you know, show both the positive and the negative interpretation, since usually there's, you can have both or it can go either way. So just keep in mind that it's something I'm going to try to do here during the course of this discussion when that comes up. So that's interesting in terms of Mercury becoming more prominent in his chart. If he had Virgo rising, I've already mentioned that everything becomes more angular. The Mars moves into the 12th house, which is actually kind of interesting. And that's one of the arguments actually I have in favor, is if you had Mars in the first house, it might be more focused on the body in terms of manifesting in specific health issues, whereas Mars in the 12th house often tends to manifest as more of a focus on one's enemies and on conflicts with one's enemies as being sort of a more dominant theme in one's life. And that's actually one of the arguments, additionally, to me, in favor of the 12th house Mars rather than the first house Mars, according to whole sign houses, with the caveat that, of course, that Mars is still going to be conjunct the degree of the ascendant, so you're still going to be seeing those some of those first house themes anyways. Other points in favor of the Virgo rising chart. So a number of astrologers, a number of modern astrologers pointed out that he's had his secondary progressed sun has progressed up to conjunct his ascendant over the past year. And what's interesting about this to me is that his secondary progressed sun moved into Virgo on August 7th of this year. And so it's at that point, you've got two options here, and this is sort of becomes a judgment call on the part of the astrologer. Either his secondary progressed sun came up to the degree of the ascendant and was largely in that degree during the course of the year when he launched his presidential campaign in 2015 and then eventually secured the nomination and became the official nominee at the Republican National Convention in July of 2016. And that's right about the point that the secondary progressed sun would have been right on his ascendant. Or since the secondary progressed sun moved into Virgo on August 7th, from that point forward, for like the next 30 years, then you've got an alternate thing of maybe that was the point when the sun actually fully hit his ascendant and is still there at this point. So it would still be in the first degree of Virgo for like this entire year, from August 7th of this year all the way through his winning the election and then eventually on Inauguration Day. So again, there's some overlap there, but that one is one where while I could see it being, you know, the sun hitting that during the primaries and during receiving the nomination and you know, becoming the victor in the primaries, I could also actually strongly see it, and I slightly lean more towards the direction of it making more sense if his secondary progressed sun moving into Virgo was the point at which it fully hit his ascendant, and that would have started in August and now is still in full effect, you know, after winning the presidency. So it's just one of those data points that you have to take into account that I wanted to note here, because it's one of the things I'm noting as I'm going through and trying to look at this with a fresh pair of eyes, which is what I feel like is necessary at this point, given what's happened. I mean, the secondary progressions itself, one thing I will say is I did not look at the secondary progressions for the most part. And if this election has done anything for me, it's reignited some interest in secondary progressions that I think I had lost over the past decade in focusing on other techniques, not in the sense that I'm going to throw away other techniques or stop prioritizing them or, you know, start using secondary progressions all the time or something like that. But I just do want to say that there were some very interesting things in the secondary progressions that I'm seeing now that I'm reading other people's analysis or that I've seen over the past week that are curious. So that secondary progressed sun hitting the ascendant thing was interesting. Another point that Anthony Lewis made on his blog recently was that Hillary Clinton had a secondary progressed Sun-Mercury conjunction go exact this year. It went exact at different points, depending on which time you use. But if you use the 8 a.m. time, it went exact around the time of in the middle of October, around the time of the debates. Versus if you use the 8 p.m. time, it went exact earlier this year, around April, during or towards the end of the primaries. So that would have been a secondary progress Kazemi in her chart going exact this year, which is really fascinating to me. Another thing I just noticed is that So Patrick Watson had pointed this out before, that Trump was born on a lunar eclipse, and that would have been the prenatal eclipse prior to the birth of both Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. But what's additionally interesting about that, I haven't seen anybody point it out, but I'm sure somebody noticed this, that if you progress Trump's chart for right now, which I was doing over the past few days, one of the things that's weird is that he was born in like June, and Bill Clinton was born in about August. So because Trump is about, 70 years old, Trump's chart actually has almost progressed to and looks very similar to Bill Clinton's chart, because if you do the progressions, it basically moves it forward a couple of months to right around the same time frame as when Bill Clinton was born. And what's weird about that is because Trump has the either Leo or Virgo rising, when you progress it forward by 70 something years, you end up with Libra rising. So it's not just Bill Clinton's like sort of some similar placements in terms of all the planets being in the same signs. It's also the same rising sign, which is kind of wild. So I don't think that's sort of relevant or would have changed a prediction or anything like that. But it's just a weird sort of eerie thing that I hadn't noticed, because I didn't even run the secondary progressions. Again, just as part of my not really putting that much focus or effort into this year due to focusing on other things. It's one of the things that in the past week, now that I've started to look through different techniques and actually pay attention to what other astrologers are saying about what techniques they were using, it's one of the interesting things that I stumbled on. There's also some interesting stuff with the rulers of the houses in Trump's chart. The ruler of the third, I mean, there's an argument that can be made that one of the things about Mars moving into the 12th, if he had Virgo rising, is that Mars would also become the ruler of the third. And so the ruler of the third would be in the 12th, contrary to the sect. So it would be a difficult planet ruling the third house of siblings and in the 12th house. And one of the things in Trump's biography is that one of his brothers died due to complications related to alcoholism. And this may have actually had a big impact on Trump. And partially as a result of that, he has never drank or done any drugs, partially supposedly due to what he saw occur with his brother, where his brother really got taken down as a result of that. So that's not foolproof, because one could also make the argument that in the Leo rising chart, Trump has like Neptune in the third house. So maybe you could make some argument about, the sibling and alcoholism and something like that. But again, it's another one of those data points that's worth considering and worth pursuing. So my general point there is, while I'm not 100% sure on this yet, I think it's something that has to be taken more seriously. And it's something that I don't feel that I did my sort of due diligence on in making the predictions about the presidential election and fully looking into, so that I could have a stronger opinion one way or another. I had considered it at one point, for example, when that guy Blake brought it up in August of 2015 or in September. But at that point, Trump was really rising and the Leo rising chart seemed to be working out decently enough. And I didn't, like most people at that point, I don't think, because part of the background of this election is that in the past few elections, especially like the last one in 2012, it seems like there's commonly this during the primaries, especially in the Republican primaries the past couple of times, there's like this weird revolving door where there'll be about a month where each of the candidates suddenly in the Republican primaries would become really prominent and suddenly start polling really well. And suddenly all of the media coverage would be focusing on one of the Republican primary candidates. And this like theme has been really notable to me over the past couple of years, to the point where I realized at one point after the 2012 election that you had to really like stop paying attention to that, because it was going to be inevitable at different points during the primaries that the media was going to focus on one candidate or another, or one candidate would suddenly start rising in the polls and would look really good for a little while, but then eventually would fall off the face of the map. And we had this to some extent during this election as well, because there were different parts. There were different points, remember, I think in like December, where suddenly like Ben Carson was leading in the primaries for some reason, but it ended up being very short-lived. There was a point towards the end of 2015 when Marco Rubio was doing well. Of course, Jeb Bush was strongly favored going into the election in terms of the amount of money that he was going to have and in terms of his sort of family legacy going into it. So one of the issues I had is, you know, even back then when Trump initially started making his rise in the middle and in the fall of 2015, not taking it seriously enough to do the due diligence to like pay attention to it, partially because I was under the mistaken presumption that I didn't want to like focus too much on something that might just end up being the temporary sort of flavor of the day, which so often happens in the primaries, where somebody will be up for a while and then they'll disappear. So, yeah, now that's part of what I'm doing in retrospect, is looking at all of these different things and doing it much more carefully and trying to do it with a much more open mind than I had done previously. So that's where that leads us with Trump, is there's three possible times. I am starting to favor the Virgo rising chart, but again, it's only been a few days now since I've taken a look at that more seriously. So I just put it out there as something that people need to consider as we move forward in the future. With Hillary's time, we said, basically what we said, if you listen to, I can't remember where the statement was made. I feel like it was in the last episode I did with Patrick, but it could have been the one before that. Basically said it looks possible for her to win and likely for her to win with Scorpio rising chart, but not with the other birth times. The 218 time, for example, seemed to show the 90s and the early 2000s rather well, because it showed her in a peak period during those times, but it didn't seem to show her more recent career as recently. And I think it was much more clear that if that time was hypothetically correct, that the answer would be that she would lose. That was kind of the conclusion that I came to with the other times, like 8 p.m., the two 8 p.m. times, which are either Gemini rising or Cancer rising as well, that none of the periods, the timing periods looked very positive or very eminent for this time period. And then the charts themselves did not look as good. I mean, one of the problems is that there's this issue with how Hillary's chart's set up, which is that because of the Mars-Saturn conjunction and the Scorpio stellium, that really becomes an issue, because basically if she has a night chart, let's start with a day chart. If she has a day chart, then she has Mars in Leo squaring all of the entire stellium of planets in Scorpio. She has several planets, several inner planets, personal planets in Scorpio. And if she has a day chart, then Mars is the most difficult planet in the chart, and it's squaring all of those Scorpio planets. So the thing is, though, is that there's a mitigation in that instance, because all of those planets are actually in Scorpio, then they have reception with Mars, which takes some of the edge off of the square. So it still indicates difficult things, it still indicates major hardships and difficulties and oppositions, but due to that reception, it would be mitigated to some extent so that the person would still be able to accomplish sort of a great deal of things, especially if the Scorpio rising chart itself was correct, because then the ruler of the ascendant would be Mars, which itself is funny, because then it leads back to a principle that I talked about on the podcast last fall, I think like fall of 2015 and some of those episodes, which is that if you have a day chart, the most difficult planet is going to be Mars, and whatever house that's in, that's going to indicate one of the most difficult areas of life for you. So for example, you know, if it's in the fifth house, it might indicate problems with children. If it's in the seventh house, it might indicate problems with relationships. But one of the things I've seen happen, and I have a whole sort of section on this in one of the lectures in my Hellenistic course, where I show a bunch of different people and how it's worked out for them, is that sometimes if the most difficult planet is also the ruler of the ascendant, then sometimes that can mean that either there's something about that person. It basically means that the energy of the malefic or the energy of the difficult planet somehow gets taken on, or I had a correct word for it that I used to use, but I've lost it at the moment. But the person sort of takes on the energy of that planet and can sometimes become the agent of that planet in their own life, either in that they create the problems in their own life that somehow they experience in that area, or in some instances, they simply are perceived that way, so that the person has a negative perception by other people for some reason. And that's the sort of malefic quality that comes off. So that, of course, in the Scorpio rising chart becomes really fascinating with Hillary, because if she has Scorpio rising and then she has Mars in Leo in the 10th house in a day chart, but ruling the ascendant. So the fact that it's the ruler of the ascendant in the 10th house would normally show somebody who's very focused on career matters and focused on eminence and sort of getting ahead in life. Basically, the ruler of the ascendant and what house it's located in shows you, is one of the things that shows you what the person can be focused on or what can become a major focus in the person's life. For her, it's the 10th house, so it's her career. The problem, though, is she also has the most difficult planet in the chart in the 10th house, and therefore that's also the area of life where she would be expected to have some of the greatest difficulties and hardships and losses and setbacks. Then on top of that, you have to then add on top of it's the fact that it would also be the ruler of the ascendant, so that some of those things would come about, or some of those difficulties would be brought about by the native themselves, or to some extent the native themselves would be perceived as creating some of those issues, which people then would react negatively to. So obviously that's fascinating for anyone who's followed this election or followed her career on a number of different levels, because either you could say, in some instances, perhaps you could say that she created some of the issues that became issues in her career or led to part of her self-undoing or downfall. So, regardless of how one feels about that politically or where you come down on it, you could say, if you wanted to, that the choice to do like a private email server and then the fact that that became a focal point of this campaign cycle, and that she got into trouble with that and was investigated by the FBI and all that other stuff, and that was the thing that came out it came up again in the very last week or two of the election, that because that was sort of like a personal choice on her part to do that, that in some way, either right, whether it was right or wrong for that to become the focal point of the election, regardless of that, the fact that that was like a personal choice on her part ended up, inadvertently creating problems in her 10th house. And because it was the ruler of the ascendant, because Mars was the ruler of the ascendant and it's the planet creating problems in that house, the fact that it was the ruler of the ascendant meant that she had some hand in that. So from that perspective, it's kind of interesting. Another perspective is just, the likability factor and the idea of, how do I put this? The fact that, this election was unique, of course, because the two candidates had the highest sort of unlikability factor of any candidates in history, and that Hillary would have had the highest unlikability factor if not for the fact that she was running against Trump, who slightly was more in that regard. And it's fascinating to me then from that perspective how both of them had Mars and Leo, and both of them had that Mars connected with angles in some way. For Hillary, it would have been ruling the ascendant and in the 10th whole sign house, whereas for Trump, it would have been at the very least conjunct the degree of the ascendant within a few degrees. So, so that's one of the just general points. Is it's also fascinating now in retrospect in the way that her life narrative has turned out, is with Mars contrary to the sect ruling the ascendant in the 10th house, that she's getting it from both sides. So she's getting sort of the hatred from the right, of course, especially in this presidential election, but also she's getting flack from the left as well. And there's a lot of people in the sort of immediate aftermath of the election, sort of throwing around blame. And certainly a lot of the people who voted in the primaries for Bernie are saying that, you know, are rushing to sort of say that Bernie would have won the presidential election and therefore it's Hillary's fault for whatever she did in order to make Bernie not win and to get the nomination or what have you. Anyway, that's going kind of far afield, but it's one of the interesting things just about some of the birth time issues and even about the different perspective, you know, that I have, even if the Scorpio rising chart is correct at this point in terms of the narrative of her life. And that's going to come up again just in a minute when it comes to perfections. So we've covered all the natal placements. This is where I get into the third part of this discussion. I guess I've already kind of wandered into that territory. But the third part of the discussion is, what if somehow I still ended up using the right birth time? What if somehow Hillary was born around 8 a.m., did have Scorpio rising, and therefore, you know, despite all of the odds and despite the alternative times that were floating around for her, maybe I ended up still using the correct chart after all. Did I just miscall it? Did I misinterpret the chart? And that's one of the things I want to be clear about, is that while in retrospect I am acknowledging how in some ways reckless it was to base my prediction on not knowing for sure, not having double A data, and essentially basing it on the opposite time of what she told me based on the rumor that she was giving out different times, which, you know, it's hard to validate, may or may not have been validated at any point. Despite that, I'm having to consider that as a possibility. I think the Scorpio rising chart does still make sense, and I may have miscalled it. So now I want to explain the scenarios that I've figured out at this point so far in the less than a week now since this happened, where it could have still been the same time, but where I could have misinterpreted it. And the reason I want to go into this is because I want to show you why I misinterpreted it and how you as an astrologer could have made the same mistake, or how anybody could have made the same mistake. So, and hopefully, you know, somebody will learn something from this in terms of, I don't want to say not making the same mistake in the future, because I think the same mistake still could have been made, but in order to fully illustrate what the dilemma was, which led to it. So, as I said before, I really primarily only use two techniques. I use zodiac releasing and annual perfections, which are both Hellenistic Time Lord techniques or timing techniques. And in some way, my focus on only those two techniques and not really looking into other things may have been partially a mistake and partially a departure from last time as well. I don't want to overemphasize that because those are basically the two primary techniques that I used in 2012. But one of the things I did in 2012 that I didn't follow up with as much in this election is I did pay attention to other charts and other techniques like transits and secondary progressions a little bit more. I also took into account things like the nomination charts much more seriously and the charts for the launch of the campaigns and other things like that. So there are all these like sort of secondary or like tertiary charts that I also took into account last time. Whereas in this one, I basically, in that 2 week period, and it was really more like a 1 week period prior to the ESAR conference, you know, busted out these two techniques and threw them at the charts in order to see who seemed to come out on top. And that was my primary focus with this election. So, the gist of it, the most simple way to put it, is that both techniques showed an eminent period for Hillary that would be very subjectively difficult. If I had to break it down into completely like not using any technical terms and explaining what both techniques indicated, that's basically it. They showed a very eminent period in her life that would be very difficult. So, let's get into then how they indicated that or what that means specifically, so that I can show you what the dilemma was and where things went wrong. So we'll start with perfection, because that's a little bit easier to conceptualize, even if you don't know the technique. And if you do know the technique, then it should be pretty straightforward, sort of why I'm saying what I'm saying. So I've talked about it a few times already a little bit, but let's get into it with more details. So with annual perfections, it's a very simple, but it's a very powerful timing technique, where all you do is you start from the rising sign, so whatever sign the ascendant is located in, and then you count one sign per year from birthday to birthday for each year of the native's life, forward in zodiacal order. So in the first year of a person's life, if they have Scorpio rising, then Scorpio is activated that year. Then when they have their first birthday, it moves to Sagittarius for 1 year. Then when they have their next birthday, it would move to the next sign, which would be Capricorn, for 1 year, and so on and so forth. So you just count one sign for each year of the native's life, starting with the rising sign, and you just keep moving forward in zodiacal order. So eventually, after 12 years, it will come all the way around. It'll complete the cycle and come back to the rising sign. Then what happens is it just repeats the cycle over again at that point, so that the rising sign again becomes activated at 12, and then at 13, it's the next sign in zodiacal order, and at 14, it's the next sign after that, and so on and so forth. So what was interesting about Hillary's, and what we've known for a little while now, is that her birthday is in late October. So what happened is she had her birthday just a few weeks ago, about 2 weeks before Election Day. And what happened at that point is she switched into a Leo perfection year or a 10th house perfection year using whole sign houses. So, and that's using the Scorpio rising chart. So again, I'm using the Scorpio rising chart and showing you why I made the prediction that I did, based on that birth time. And part of what I want to show is how that could actually still make sense, but how I could have miscalled it. So using the Scorpio rising chart, literally about 2 weeks before Election Day, she switches into a Leo/10th whole sign house perfection year. So it activates her 10th house for the next 12 months, starting in October of 2016, going through till October of 2017. So for the entire year, and it switches to her 10th house. So usually when you have a certain house activated in a given year, it activates all the topics associated with that house. So this is pretty, you know, striking, right? She switches into a 10th house perfection year right before Election Day. And the 10th house, of course, in pretty much every Western tradition of astrology, is the house that has to do with one's career, one's profession, one's eminence, one's reputation and sort of life direction, and all these other themes that have to do with essentially a person's public life or a person's career. So from that point of view, we could say that this would be a more eminent year in Hillary's life. And one of the things is that because perfections, because it just, you count one sign for each year and there's only 12 signs, that means it repeats every 12 years. So you can actually take it back in 12-year increments in order to see. One of the ways to use the techniques to make predictions is just to take it back in 12-year increments in order to see what happened when the same house or the same sign was activated 12 years ago, and then take it 12 years before that to see what happened in that year, and then 12 years before that. And what you'll find is you'll actually see a lot of repetitions of very similar themes and very similar sort of trends come up in the person's life every 12 years that are often tied into that specific house. So in pretty much all of these 12 house perfection years, Hillary has either become more eminent or her career and life direction have become much more of the focus in that year. So one of them really early on, for example, was in 1968, she switched into a 10th house perfection year. She became like the president of her class in college, and she graduated from college and at Wellesley College, and she gave the very first student commencement speech. So prior to that time, students didn't give commencement speeches, but it was 1968, and they wanted to 1968-69, and her class wanted a student to give a commencement speech. And they pushed for it. They pushed it through the administration, and the administration eventually agreed. And so she got up and gave this commencement speech. But what happened is that spoke immediately after, like a senator or like a he was like a Republican politician, gave a speech, and she and some of her sort of student body reacted negatively to it. And so she got up and gave a speech immediately afterwards that she quickly rewrote, which kind of rebuffed or in some ways contradicted some of what the Republican senator had just said. And he was the sort of primary guest who was there to give the commencement speech as a guest speaker. So she ended up becoming very, she got cover. She basically got a lot of press for this. She ended up in like Life magazine and all this other stuff, but it also created a little bit of controversy surrounding that she had done that. So it was a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of suddenly she became more eminent in that year, in that 10th house perfection year, but it was also partially with some controversy surrounding it, or as a result of creating some controversy on some level, because she gave a sort of Marzi type speech, somewhat combative type speech that was directed at that guest speaker. So right there, you can see, on the one hand, the 10th house becoming activated, but then you also see the other part of it, which is that it doesn't just activate the house and the sign, but it also activates the planets that are in that sign as well. And this is where we run into some problems with her chart, because what she has in her chart that most astrologers know at this point is she has a triple conjunction of Mars and Saturn and Pluto in Leo. And if the Scorpio rising chart is correct, then Leo is her 10th whole sign house. So she has the ruler of the ascendant there, which is Mars, which shows the like sort of focus on one's career and the sort of ambition in that area of life. But she also has, you know, three of the most difficult planets in that house. So it shows that that's the area where she would be expected to have some of her greatest difficulties and hardships as well. So what we get typically with these 10th house perfection years that come up every 12 years is a period of greater eminence and focus on career matters, but also potentially very often sort of controversies and opposition and setbacks at the same time. So in terms of the one I want to present first, then, because so then one of the things was studying the different 10th house perfection years that she's had in the past. This is part of the prediction in order to figure out what would happen in the future. And it came down to two other 10th house perfection years that she had had. And the one I ended up focusing on was the one that was two 12 year cycles ago, which started in late October of 1992. So if you take it back 12 years from now, it takes us back to 2004. And if you take it back 12 years before that, it takes us to October of 1992 and the birthday that she had starting in October 1992, right before the 1992 presidential election. So what happens is she has her birthday in October of 1992. She switches into a 10th house perfection year. And then about a week or two later, her husband wins the 1992 U.S. presidential election and becomes president of the United States. And so then that January, a few months later, still in that 10th house perfection year, they together move into the White House and she becomes the first lady. So right there, we're seeing the 10th house again, and we're seeing those themes of like eminence and prominence coming up in her life, and them as a sort of team having great political success and sort of hitting the height of what's possible in that political career at that time, and that sort of path that they had been on for a few decades at that point, since he had been governor for a while until then. But then what happens is that he gives her the job, or she gets the job of and gets set up with an office in the White House. And her job and her mission is to push healthcare reform. And right away in early in 1993, she sets out to sort of push healthcare reform and to make that like her primary job. And what happens over the course of the next year is she pushes that very strongly, but then there's huge, huge pushback against it from basically from Republicans and from conservatives and from other from lobbyists and other people who, you know, do not want, who are against healthcare reform, basically, or against single payer healthcare, or whatever, you know, that whole issue is. And what ended up happening is she really did not do well over the course of the next year or two in terms of the media and the press and everything else. And basically, you know, again, regardless of one's political views, it was at this point that Hillary very much gets sort of like demonized in the press, either rightly or wrongly, partially due to some of this focus on healthcare reform in that year. So, and then eventually in the following year, that ends up failing and they have to sort of abandon it completely. So again, the point though is that that was a full 12-month period that started in her birthday in 1992. And what ended up happening is she had a great period of victory and eminence in that they won the 1992 presidential election in that 10th house perfection year. But then she also suffered major opposition and hardship and loss during the course of that year and difficulties in her career. At the same time, where you when you also get the activation of Mars and Saturn in the same sign. So what I thought was going to happen, the fact that basically what I thought was going to happen is that it would be a repetition of that. And because I saw that she was repeating the same perfection year as 1992, I thought it indicated that she'd have a repetition and basically she'd get into the White House, but then she would encounter major opposition and hardship and potential scandals or other things like that that would make it a very subjectively difficult year for her, even though she won the presidency. But what ended up happening instead is that it seemed like it ended up being more of a repetition of the previous perfection year before 1992, which was 12 years before 1992, of course, is 1980. So what happened in 1980 is that it's like in the 1970s, she got together with Bill Clinton. She ended up leaving her career. She had like a career as a lawyer in Washington, and she ended up leaving it in order to move to Arkansas to be with Bill Clinton and to pursue sort of that relationship and that marriage with him, but also to pursue some sort of like shared political goals that they had. And so in 1978, he gets elected as the governor of Arkansas. And and that was a great victory and stuff. But then what happens is that she wasn't viewed very well and she wasn't perceived very well and didn't do some of the things that perhaps she could have in order to, it's hard to put that, but it's sort of like subsume her own personality in order to fit the mold of whatever the perception was of what she should have been doing as a governor's wife in Arkansas in the late 1970s. So what ends up happening is that even though he wins and becomes governor in 1978, 2 years later, there's another election and they're basically both promptly kicked out of the governorship and he loses the election in 1980. And a lot of the focus turned towards her, and there was a lot of sort of finger pointing towards her as being part of the reason that he lost the 1980 election. And so that election in November of 1980, of course, took place again right after she moved into another 10th house perfection year. So that 1980 election, then she's repeating that right now, or she just moved into the same thing in October of 2016 for the next year. So what happened in that perfection year of 1980 is they lost the governorship, and a lot of the attention turned towards her because the commentary was that she was perceived as like this East Coast sort of liberal who was in Arkansas and wasn't doing the things that she was supposed to be doing as a governor's wife, and that she didn't fit the mold or like... there's just a lot of negative things swirling about sort of who she was and the things that she was doing that were perceived as inappropriate, like the fact that she kept her own last name and didn't adopt her husband's last name, so that she was still being called Hillary Rodham instead of Hillary Clinton, or that she didn't wear makeup, or that she did all these other things. So what was interesting about that year, though, is that she, after they lost that and were kicked out of the governor's mansion, she basically completely reformed her personality, and she took control of partially of his sort of political career or political campaign and re-election campaign from that point forward. And she made a point to completely remake her image in order to sort of subsume her own identity into whatever it needed to be in order for them to get reelected. So that was the point at which she started being called Hillary Clinton or Hillary Rodham Clinton, so that she was not just keeping her maiden name anymore. And she started wearing makeup and other things like that in order to sort of fit that role. And it worked, because then 2 years later in 1982, they were reelected and got back into the governorship. But it was only a result of the fact that they had this crushing defeat in 1980, and it was put largely on her. And then she, I'm sure, went through an extremely difficult year then of both sort of struggling with the fact that she was partially to blame for him losing the election, but then also having to completely change her image and to subsume a lot of her own personal sort of beliefs and desires in order for them to pursue this sort of political career that they wanted to pursue together. Anyway, so long story short is, with the perfections technique, it comes down to those are the three events that stood out the most that we had to sort of choose from in terms of predicting what would happen when that same perfection year kicked in a few weeks ago when she had her birthday in October. And remember, she's born late in the month. She's born October 26th of 1947. So she literally has her birthday in these 10th house perfection years right before election day each time. So it kicks in and it's active for election day, but then also the entirety of that year following it until the following October. So we had those three basically to go off of primarily, which were, you know, her giving the commencement speech at Wellesley and becoming more eminent during that time, becoming the first, you know, first student speaker out of her own class, but, you know, getting some flack for it as well as some recognition. Then you had the 1980 governorship, where they basically suffered a crushing defeat. And then you had the 1992 one, where they started the year with a huge victory. But then she still encountered major obstacles over the course of the next year and major sort of vilification in some sense, either rightly or wrongly, regardless of your political sort of views. So what ended up happening is basically, I thought it was going to be, partially due to the confluence of some of the other techniques, I thought it was going to be a repetition of 1992. And instead it was a repetition of 1980, and you got the crushing defeat rather than the sort of period of eminence and victory followed by a period of difficulty. So sort of right there, I just want that to be clear, and I hope that's clear enough. It's like, I realize this is just audio, and usually this is something I would do together with charts and together with teaching the technique. And actually, that's one thing I should mention. It's like Lisa Scheim, my partner, gave a lecture on this topic, on showing how you can follow these repetitions, these 12-year repetitions using perfections, and how they'll sometimes be very informative and can help you to make a prediction about the future in clients' charts. And she showed a bunch of clients' charts and a few celebrity charts where you could see this 12-year repetition work out in different ways in people's lives and how you could use it as a predictive technique. And I need to actually, you know, it's actually my fault that I said, you know, Hillary Clinton actually has, when election day takes place, she's about to start a repetition of a 10th house perfection year. And because we're in election season, that would probably be really interesting for the audience to see that sort of repetition. So Lisa actually integrated that into her lecture, which, you know, I should make clear that was actually my idea rather than hers. So she showed both of them, and she pointed out how Hillary had this sort of crushing defeat in 1980, and then she'd had this victory in 1992, and how we assumed then that it was going to be a repetition of 1992. But that was definitely more my fault for her sort of putting that in there. But she does a really good job of actually demonstrating that technique. So I'd recommend checking it out if anyone's interested. And then if you have any hate mail, just send it towards me rather than her. So sorry about that, Lisa. Okay, so that's the perfections technique. And I hope it's clear that sort of why that was a little bit difficult to call, and while why it could have gone either way in terms of, you know, you having those two different options in her history. But either way, we knew it was going to be a difficult year, even if it was also a very eminent one. Now, of course, in retrospect, it makes a lot of sense that the eminence was that she almost became president, and she evidently won the popular vote, and she's up by almost 2 million votes at this point, from what I've seen. It looks like there's a little debate about this, because on social media, some sites are saying that she's lost the popular vote as well, but I actually just checked this in order to be sure, and it seems like that's actually some sort of weird disinformation, because at this point, she's up by like 1 million votes in the popular vote. So she lost the Electoral College, though, which is what counts and what matters in terms of determining if you become president. Anyway, so in retrospect, obviously, the very eminent time period that she's in right now is the fact that she was the first female nominee of the Democratic Party, and she became somewhat close or almost became president, but then lost the election in a very close race. So you get both of those things in terms of the eminence of the 10th house, but also the sort of crushing, well, yeah, the very subjective difficulty, a subjectively negative period that's represented by Mars and Saturn and Pluto in the 10th house getting activated at the same time. So that's part of it. So that's one of the two primary techniques that I used. The other part of it, and this is the reason why I leaned more towards thinking it would be a repetition of 1992 rather than a repetition of 1980, and it's because of the second technique that I used, which is zodiac releasing. So zodiac releasing is a little bit harder to explain just sort of verbally like this in a short period without any visuals, but the gist of it is that it showed that she was in an 8-year-long career peak period that would last from 2010 until 2018. The technique also showed, and I outlined all of this in my zodiac releasing lecture at the ESAR conference, because I knew that I wasn't going to get that much time to talk about it on the presidential panel itself, where they actually cut my time at the last minute from 8 minutes to 4 minutes. So I actually even had to condense it down from what I thought I was going to be able to present, which really was lame. But So I gave a talk separately on zodiac releasing, and I showed how in some client charts and some celebrity charts, how you could use it to time peak periods and transitions in a person's career and life direction. And that's part of the lecture that I've been selling since I got back from ESAR, which I'm going to record an addendum to. So if any of you have purchased it, I'm going to basically write an addendum to it to show what happened with the technique and do a sort of, not a full recap like this, but at least show you some of the parts of it and how, what actually happened in retrospect. So I'll be sending that out before too long in the next week or so. And yeah, so anyway, back to explaining the technique. So zodiac releasing showed that she was in an 8-year career peak period from 2010 until 2018. It also showed that there was a buildup period prior to that. So again, this is all using the Scorpio rising chart and assuming the Scorpio rising chart is correct. It showed there was a 20-year preparatory period, which should have been preparatory and should have prepared her or built up to the 8-year peak period from 2010 to 2018. So for 20 years, that means it started in 1991 and it lasted until 2010. So it said, so 20-year preparatory period from about 1991 to 2010, with a transition period around 2000, a career transition period around 2008 to 2009, which is actually when she became Secretary of State. So it actually made a lot of sense and still makes a lot of sense in terms of you know, 1991 is when Bill Clinton launches his presidential campaign, and then they are in the White House during the 90s, and then she becomes a senator in 2000, and all of this is taking place within the context of this 20-year preparatory period. Then she hits this thing we call the loosing of the bond, which always indicates a major career transition between 2008 and 2009. That, of course, makes sense because she loses the primary to Obama, but then becomes Secretary of State, which is clearly a major career transition. And it's still all taking place within the context of the 20-year preparatory period. Then in 2010, she goes into the peak period for 8 years. She finishes out her time as Secretary of State in 2012 and 2013. And then she, the highest point within this 8-year peak period was going to be this 27-month Capricorn period that lasted from October of 2013 until December of 2015, according to the technique. And of course, during this time, she launched her presidential campaign. So that's the technique itself is indicating an 8-year peak period, and that the highest point of the entire peak period was October of 2013 through December of 2015. So this is the reason, and this is actually the technique that Patrick and I used back in 2012 when we were contacted by that reporter from ABC News who was asking us if we thought in April of 2012 that Hillary would run in 2016. And so we pull up this technique, and it says she's in an 8-year peak period from 2010 through 2018, and that the highest point within it falls between October of 2013 and December of 2015. Which we knew she would have, if she was going to run, she would have launched her presidential campaign sometime in 2015. So we're like, yeah, it looks like she's going to run. And we can say that pretty confidently as long as this is the correct birth time. So that was our rationale surrounding that, which turned out to be correct in terms of that. But what happens is that because that the focal point of it ended in December of 2015, which is right in the middle, or still, I guess, pretty early on in the primaries, right about the time she's starting to get. Yeah, so it ends in 2015. And then what happens is that she moves into a sub period. So the way that this technique works is that there are general periods that last usually for like a decade or two. So she was in an 8-year long Libra period, which was a peak period that was indicating a period of heightened importance and activity in terms of her career. But then there's also sub periods within that, which are like shorter periods of time that activate other parts of the chart for a shorter duration. So the high point of the entire 8-year period was partially launching the presidential campaign under that 27-month Capricorn period from October of 2013 to December of 2015. But then what happened is she switched into this Aquarius period from December of 2015 until June of 2018. And the problem with Aquarius in her chart is that that's the sign opposite to Mars and Saturn. And in this technique, planets can aspect empty signs. And the way that you determine what the quality of a period will be like and how the native will actually experience it is that you look at what planets are aspecting the sign that's become aspected by a hard aspect, so by a conjunction or square opposition. So basically, starting in December of 2015, she moved into one of the more difficult possible configurations that would have indicated a subjectively difficult period. Then on top of that, there's further sub-periods where you can look at individual months and individual days. And what happened is on L3, on level 3, it moved to Leo from September 28th through November 15th. So that was the sign that was activated during the actual time period of the election itself. And what happened is it switched over to the sign that contained the two malefics. And for some reason, that sign actually, this is what I call a foreshadowing period, and that sign of Leo will repeat itself next year between June 8th and July 25th of 2017. So I don't know what that's all about, but that's kind of weird. But the main point here is just that while she was in an 8-year period of eminence that should represent the high point of her career on the higher levels of the technique, on the lower levels of the technique, it also showed her switching into a very subjectively difficult period in the run-up to the election, and then especially around Election Day. So my interpretation, this is something that I saw and I was very aware of it. And it's ironic looking back on it in retrospect, because if you listen to that lecture that I gave at ESAR on zodiac releasing, and you listen to the principle that I teach, where I say the activation of the signs that are angular from the lot of fortune indicate periods of heightened importance and heightened activity, but they don't tell you whether the period's going to be experienced as subjectively positive or negative, that you can only determine that by looking at which planets are aspecting the sign by hard aspect, especially the benefics and malefics. So it's basically the end result is that it was true that it was a period of heightened importance and activity and eminence and probably the most eminent time in her entire life. But because it switched over and activated both malefics on the lower level, it also resulted in it being very subjectively difficult and sort of crushing. So she encountered a very public defeat, basically. So again, it's the same with the perfections, where what I interpreted that as, one of the problems with Hillary's chart is that she has different periods in which she sometimes becomes eminent, but then gets into like conflicts or fights and, you know, has major opposition, but still, you know, becomes eminent. Other times there are periods like in 1980 where it's just that she becomes eminent, but then gets defeated. So the issue that I ran into there again is I saw that the broader period lasted through to 2018, that the broader peak period lasted from 2010 until 2018. And then it would switch into a more difficult period after that. So what I assumed, because the peak period would end, so what I assumed was that she would win the presidency in 2016 and get into the White House, but that she would only serve for one term, because the peak period ends in like October of 2018, which is around the time of the midterms, and then there would just be 2 years before that, before the election of 2020. So again, what I misread is that it was indicating that this would be the high point of her career, but that she would run into major difficulties. And what it ended up, the narrative that I had sort of thought in my head, which was then sort of compounded by the fact that that's the way it looked like it was going additionally in the polls. And as far as most people, I think, were concerned, or most spectators or commentators were concerned, that it looked like it was a very eminent period in which she would win, but then encounter major opposition and difficulties. And that was sort of my reading of it. Instead, I misread it, and the actual narrative now in retrospect is that this will, in retrospect, be the high point of her career, almost winning the presidency, even winning the popular vote, so that technically she got the most votes in the presidential election. But then the difficulty ultimately is that she still lost and you know, did not win the presidency. So obviously that narrative is clear now in retrospect, but it was hard to call that ahead of time because she had this mixed history of sometimes winning and then getting opposition rather than just being defeated right at the start. And therein lies, I think, the problem with what I ran into. So that's largely from the perspective of Hillary's chart, and that's partially because hers was the chart, you know, that we'd been working with the longest since 2006, but also just more recently since our prediction in 2012 that she would indeed run. I should say that it was also complicated a little bit by the zodiac releasing periods indicating that Trump would have a major career transition between December of 2017 and March of 2020. And that's something that still bothers me, because you have sort of, you have the separate issue of uncertainty surrounding Trump's birth time with those three different charts or three different times that I mentioned earlier. But using, what is it? Pretty much all three of them, I think, if I'm correct, result in similar zodiac releasing periods. There is a difference between the early Leo rising time and the later Leo rising time, where the earlier one might actually make him winning make sense more because then the ruler of the Lot of Spirit would be activated when he moved into the 25-year cancer period that he started in the year 2000, that he's still basically in the middle of now. But basically all three, what threw me off with Trump's the most in terms of his zodiac releasing periods, of everything else aside, is that for some reason he has this thing called the loosing of the bond, which usually my keyword for that is a major career transition. And it takes place between December of 2017 and March of 2020. And it's like the only, my thinking ahead of time was that that looked more like him having a major career transition in the aftermath of the presidential election and having to figure out what to do after he lost. And so I kind of assumed that maybe he would pursue that thing that it was being speculated about if he had lost, that he would set up like a different media network or something like that, like a new news network, which had been some speculation over the past few months. And so the issue was I didn't understand why he would be having a major career transition that would only start a year after the election if he was to win. And that was the thing that compounded my assumption that Hillary would still be able to pull it off because she was in that peak period, even though it also became a very difficult period, is because the thing I was seeing as more prominent in Trump's chronology was still a year or two away after the election. So, unfortunately, that's going to be an issue that's still on the table then in the future that we'll have to see how it plays out, because the only way this makes any sense is if he does end up having some sort of career transition that ends up making his chronology or ends up marking his chronology more strongly than his winning the election and his inauguration will. And that's something I've started to think about and look into and try to contemplate the possibilities. I mean, Lisa and I noticed that, you know, it's weird that it starts in December of 2017 because, of course, we know that Saturn will complete its two or three year period in Sagittarius in December of 2017, and it'll move into Capricorn for a couple of years. And we were looking at Mike Pence's chart the other night, and we noticed that Mike Pence has Saturn at 5 degrees of Capricorn. So weirdly, right about the time that's starting, Mike Pence will be starting his second Saturn return. Yeah, then and there's a lot of different sort of ways you could go with that. I don't really feel like it's probably not my place to speculate on the nature of that transition at this point, though, but only to explain why I got the current prediction wrong. And that was the thing that threw me off partially about Trump's chart and made me put most of the emphasis then on Hillary's chart and trying to interpret whether that major peak period that she was in that seemed to indicate this is the high point of her career, whether that indicated that she would then take the presidency. So we'll have to see what happens with Trump's career in the long term and what ends up happening with that. And if that at some point sort of becomes clear or explains why that was showing up as more prominent to me than the current time frame was. So those are really the two main things. A lot of it comes down to miscalling Hillary's chart, if indeed that was even the correct birth time. So I know it's not abundantly clear, but I hope I've at least been able to convey the general point that the issue is that in the two main techniques, she was clearly in a period that should have been more eminent, but then would have been difficult. But because of some of her past history, I called it as being, you know, is going to win, but then will encounter major opposition and difficulty and probably only serve one term. Instead, she was just defeated right at the start of it. And while this will end up probably in retrospect end up being the most eminent time in terms of her biography, this is sort of the high point of her career. Nonetheless, she did not win the presidency. And so that ended up being a misjudgment on my part. But I hope it's at least understandable why I sort of made that call. And you can sort of see how, you know, if you put yourself in my shoes, you could have potentially made the same call. All right, so other miscellaneous thoughts. So I finished the main part of this episode where I really just wanted to review what happened and sort of talk through some of the things I've been thinking about over the past week as I've been reviewing my own prediction. I have a few other miscellaneous thoughts that I've just been sort of jotting down from in notes over the course of the past week since this has been happening, and just things that I've thought about and that I've reflecting on in the aftermath of the election that I want to talk about for the remainder of this. So, I mean, one of the points is just that astrology obviously is not a crystal ball that shows you a scene of exactly what will happen as if you're watching it through like a television or you're watching a movie or something like that. And this is an issue because it gets to the core of a fundamental misconception about what astrology is and what it does and what you can do with it. And assuming I don't sort of back out and change it at the last minute, that's why I have the sort of image of as the main image for this episode of this like guy, this wizard looking guy who's like staring into a crystal ball and looking surprised. Because on some level, it's like that is the public perception of astrology, and what astrologers are doing is that we're looking into a crystal ball and like seeing a live image of the future somehow, and therefore that's how we're able to tell things about the future. You know, most astrologers realize that that's not the case, and that instead what we're doing is something closer to, or at least, you know, we can't make any perfect analogies, but one of the analogies that you can make with astrology is that it's kind of more like forecasting or weather forecasting or something like that, where you have many different data points and all of it eventually like adds up, and then you're trying to sort of call it or predict the totality of where all of those data points are going to lead to, even though in many instances what you're looking at is like conflicting data points and a confluence of different conflicting things that you're trying to figure out when it comes down to the final totals, what direction that's going to go. So part of this is that, you know, astrology involves the study of what are essentially, I think one of the ways to conceptualize this is that astrology involves the study of omens in order to determine the future. So what these are indication. These are sort of individual indications about the future. It's not mechanistic in that you get like this entire thing that all points definitely in one direction and causes that to happen, or it all points definitely in another direction and causes that to happen. But instead what you have is that there's many different omens and many different layers that are pointing in different directions and revealing different things about the sort of different aspects of the situation. And this is one of the reasons why astrologers can get it wrong, because they can misinterpret certain omens, or they can misinterpret the overall totality of where everything is going. So, you know, and the reason for that is obviously that elections are complicated things, and you're going to have many different positive and negative things happening in a person's life or in the world in general, or you're going to have different positive and negative events that come about in the course of the campaign and each person's campaign throughout the course of it. And, you know, you're going to have certain things that are very positive and certain things that are going to be very negative. And you're trying to sort through all of that ultimately in order to figure out a specific thing like who's going to be the president over the course of the next 4 to 8 years. So one of the issues then that's challenging is that there's a problem in terms of falsifiability, in that no situation repeats itself exactly the same. So everything ends up being a unique scenario. And while you can look back at historical instances in which there some of the indications were the same, or like some isolated omens were the same and are repeating now, the totality of all of the different indications are always going to be unique. So there was never any election like 2016 in the past that we have to refer to and show that, well, when, you know, these two people with the exact same birth charts did this, you know, 100 years ago or something like that, that this was the outcome. You don't have that. All you have is the ability to sometimes focus in on one of those things and then look back at past instances, either in the person's own life, like I did with the perfections, or sometimes in a broader mundane sense. Like if you were to look at like eclipse cycles and like who won the presidency over the past several years, or I should mention one of the people who was right in my local astrology group named Paula Russa, she used a technique of looking at whether Venus was a morning star or evening star as favoring the party that was in power or the party that was challenging, and has developed a sort of technique like that, which she's tried to take back and look at other presidential elections. And we talked about that at a local meeting this past Saturday, where we sort of had a group discussion about, you know, what happened in the astrology of things and sort of reviewing it. So it's like sometimes you can take individual isolated things, but the greatest challenge is just that it's always going to be a unique situation. So you're never going to be able to fully rely on any past indications. And there's always going to be many different positive and negative indications for both candidates because there's so much going on. The challenge to the astrologer is to attempt to weigh it all and see the broader trend. But sometimes this can be tough. So one of the things that came up in past elections, like in 2004, when Bush was having his Saturn return, is the point that you can't always predict that a candidate will lose if they're having difficult transits. Because if they win, they're about to take on an incredibly difficult and taxing job for the next 4 to 8 years. So this is, and that was one of the lessons that I like tried to remember and obviously influenced my prediction here, because this is one of the reasons why, even though Hillary's activations of that Mars-Saturn-Pluto conjunction looked bad and makes sense in retrospect as a sort of crushing defeat, I didn't necessarily automatically assume that it meant that she would lose when I looked at it. I mean, I it's like I remember those points at different points over the past year where I looked at that and had concerns at different points, but I also tried to remember that you can't always take a super negative-looking transit as fully indicative of defeat, depending on the context. Like, for example, I think Bush during his Saturn return in 2004. So let's see other points that I've sort of noted over the past few days. When it comes to public figures, astrologers' perceptions of those figures and their interpretation of their charts are partially shaped by the way that they're portrayed in the media. So this is problematic because on the one hand, this partially then becomes a matter of the person's public persona versus their private one, and whether those two things are one and the same or different, which can be really tricky with politicians especially, because they typically are trying to put forward a public persona that in order to accomplish whatever their political sort of goals are, and in order to speak to a certain audience who is their sort of the people that are going to vote for them, basically. So that's been an interesting thing then, because this is, of course, the issue that we've talked about a few times before on the podcast in terms of when doing research into astrology and when using chart examples, the difference between using a celebrity chart versus using the chart of somebody you know, and the difference between, on the one hand, the advantage of the celebrity is their lives are documented to some extent, but the downside is that you don't actually know them. And so there could be a major disconnect between the public persona versus the private one, and this can lead you to interpret the chart perhaps differently based on that to some extent, or at least to base more of your assumptions about the person, especially if you then have to rectify the chart, which of course becomes an issue in this case where for essentially both candidates, both of their charts did require some level of rectification. And so we have a bit of an issue here in terms of the person's public persona versus their private one, because we're dealing with celebrity charts of people that we don't know and have never talked to and are sort of studying from afar through the media or through the things that the person themselves has put out into the world in terms of how they wanted the world to perceive them. Additionally, in this day and age, it's also affected by our astrologers' perceptions of public figures and especially politicians is also affected by the way that the candidate is portrayed in the specific brand of media that the astrologer consumes. So obviously this was an issue in this election, and this is why you know, some of the more conservative astrologers would characterize Trump positively as this sort of transformative figure who was sort of like helping the working class man or something like that. Whereas some of the liberal astrologers or other people would characterize him as, you know, what, like literally Hitler or whatever. A lot of it came down to, or it didn't completely come down to this, but I'm just making this as sort of like a general observation that depending on where you were getting your news, depending on where the astrologer was getting their news, they were going to perceive that person differently, and that was going to affect their interpretation of that person's chart to some extent. So basically, either way, this results in a skewed picture of that person on multiple levels, and it's one of the challenges of doing political astrology in modern times. And this is important because part of the analysis of the charts involves determining how the archetypal qualities have manifested in a particular person's life. And some of that comes down to a judgment call, and it comes down to what's being emphasized in the person's biography and what parts of the person's like character and motivations and their sort of overall life narrative, what version of that is the astrologer subscribing to? I feel pretty much on both sides of the spectrum, especially as politics, especially in America, becomes more divided and more extreme, you end up having this sort of battle with trying to figure out who the person is that you're trying to make a prediction about and what their actual life story or life narrative is, and to sort of like cut through everything. And that can be very difficult. And this is also important because, I mean, basically, to, you know, put it really simply, it's because the same birth chart for Donald Trump could also be the birth chart of like a turtle or something. And the context is going to be different depending on what the creature is and what their background and upbringing has been. And this is, you know, why I go back to this whole point about part of any natal analysis involves determining how the archetypal qualities have manifested in the particular native's life. The same analogy could be extended to somebody who was born at the same time as Trump, but just wasn't born into the same family or wasn't born in the same country or what have you. They may have qualities and timelines that are similar to Trump, but the different background is going to provide a different context that emphasizes certain qualities differently. And coming to a sort of objective assessment of how the person is manifesting that qualities, actually, I do think is a really integral piece of being able to make predictions about them correctly. And that's one of the advantages of being able to talk to and work with a client directly and get that sort of immediate feedback about things and to form the judgment by talking to the client themselves, versus that being one of the drawbacks about making predictions about public figures is, you know, unless you're working with that person directly, you don't have that sort of access. And so there's some level where your understanding of that person and their sort of life narrative may be off, and it may be influenced by things that are giving you a slightly different view than you might have otherwise. So let's see, other points that I've jotted down. One of the things that some astrologers are saying about sort of the predictions about Hillary winning or still being right, one of the things I've seen floating around the astrological community is some astrologers are saying that the predictions about Hillary winning are still right or could still be right because she won the popular vote. And for the most part, I don't think this is a very good statement or argument to make. And I'm saying that as somebody who that statement would, you know, otherwise benefit. I mean, I could attempt to like take that and say, oh, you know, I predicted Hillary would win and she won the popular vote, so technically she won. But I don't really think that's an accurate thing, because that's not what any of us were ultimately trying to do. We were trying to determine, you know, who's going to be inaugurated on January 20th and who's going to be the president for the next 4 years and who has the most eminent chart or the timing periods that look the most eminent during this point in time, who will ultimately, you know, become the next leader of the United States. And most of the techniques and the measurements that people were looking at were more designed to say that. And I don't really know of any technique. I mean, one of the points that has been made a few times already is I don't know of any technique that could tell you who's going to win the Electoral College versus who's going to win the popular vote. I mean, there's some possibility I want to acknowledge that there could be some technique, like some mundane technique or some electional technique, like inceptional astrology, that perhaps if it was very tied into the actual voting or the actual process of the votes versus the Electoral College or something like that, that perhaps it could show something like that about there being an issue about it being split or there being ambiguity or one candidate winning one and another the other. I don't know. I don't know that astrology can make those kind of distinctions. If it can, I don't think the majority of astrologers were using a type of astrology that would have been able to make that distinction. And so therefore, I don't think astrologers should use that necessarily as an excuse. On the other hand, I mean, in defense of that, I will say in terms of, you know, Hillary hitting the most eminent time in her life, the fact that she did win the popular vote, that she'll go down in history as the person who won the popular vote but still lost the presidential election and did not become president. I mean, that will ultimately be, on some level, the most eminent period in her life. And so it's sort of true that that's connected to and part of her narrative, and that that is, you know, something that we all picked up on in her chart. But I think that we all still miscalled it to the extent that we probably saw that all of the indicators, and that's probably why many different astrologers got this wrong, is because we all probably did see so many indicators of this being an eminent time, but there was a misjudgment in terms of it being an eminent time that was also incredibly difficult, and in which ultimately the way it worked out was that she suffered a very public defeat, basically. So, yeah, I wanted to mention that really briefly, since that's something that's going on in terms of the broader community discussion of what happened. Other things that are happening, I mean, there's a little bit of posturing from some people who got it right, and some finger pointing and other accusations that are being thrown around. The only thing I'll say, because I don't want to get too far into this, I just want to say that I don't think it's that classy to gloat. I mean, I think you should make note of your success and certainly have some recognition for it, but then sort of move on. And one of the issues I've seen in the past couple of elections, I mean, this is one of the issues why I didn't want to keep doing this, because after 2012, and why I announced that I was going to get out of political astrology, because it's really lame during even the process itself for there to be different accusations being thrown around about people's motivations and partisanship and things like that. And then the aftermath of dealing with sort of accusations and finger pointing and all sorts of other stuff. Additionally, in connection with this, I mean, one of the things that I will say is that I don't think personally that it's impressive when if somebody did this, let's say hypothetically, if somebody hypothetically was hyper-partisan and was correct about predicting that their candidate or the candidate that they prefer won, and if they're constantly throughout the course of that exalting the person who they're predicting would win and sort of saying negative things about the person that they don't like, then that's not as impressive to me, or that doesn't come off as an impressive prediction to me. And this goes both ways, because this is something I especially noticed in the 2012 election, and I think it goes for both liberals and conservatives, because there's a tendency for both of them to do it. And I've made that statement already in 2014 during my ESAR lecture, and also in my 2012 roundup, where I actually excluded at least two predictions. One of them was from a liberal and one of them was from a conservative, because it was just clear that they were being super over the top about predicting that the person that they personally preferred would win and saying that the person that they personally preferred would lose. So I don't think that, that's going to be an issue when it comes to this presidential election. And I know in the aftermath of this, this is already starting to happen a little bit, where some people are sort of throwing up their hands in the face of seeing that so many astrologers predicted wrongly that Hillary would win. Some people are immediately jumping to the conclusion and saying, well, you know, astrologers tend to be more liberal or something like that. And so, of course, most of the astrologers predicted Hillary win and therefore got it wrong. Part of the problem I have with that narrative and part of the reason I would caution that is I know that several of the astrologers who predicted that Hillary would win were conservatives or were people who actually probably, I mean, I don't know for sure, but very likely probably voted for Trump. And therefore, even though there might be certain trends like that that are definitely worth noting and worth paying attention to, especially in the future, I want to encourage people to be careful about adopting simplistic narratives about this stuff. Because as I've been researching it and trying to reflect on it over the past week, every time I see or every time I consider a specific narrative as like the sort of silver bullet that covers everything and explains what happened and why everybody got it wrong, there's always some conflicting sort of piece of evidence that contradicts that hypothesis to some extent. And while it doesn't completely override it as an obvious trend, I just want to caution people about making too many presumptions about things like that or looking for too simplistic of answers. So, tied in with or in relation to that, one of the other issues, of course, one of the related issues is that it's very hard, I think, to ignore when both the astrology of the situation and the current narrative surrounding the candidates seem to be in agreement and indicating something and to go against that. So, and this, of course, this is the part where this is another one of those sort of trends that's worth noting, but at the same time, I want to be very careful about not going too far in that direction, where Hillary, for the majority of the race, I think except for one brief period over the summer when the polls got really close, and then another period towards the very end of the race where they got close again, for the most part, Hillary was the person who was leading in the polls for the majority of this election. And, you know, obviously, I think that did have some influence on potentially some people's predictions. I definitely think, for my part, I will say that it made it easier for me to, in that 1 or 2 week period where I sort of threw together my predictions for the presidential election and was going over their charts again and going over Hillary's chart and looking at those eminent periods that she was in right now, and looking at Trump's chart and seeing that the major career transition took place a year from now, it made it easier for me to not worry too much about it and not push too hard to look at all of the other charts that I could have considered for secondary and sort of third and fourth confirmations, but instead to sort of become complicit about the primary thing that I thought that I already knew, which is that if the Scorpio rising chart was correct, then she was in a very eminent period right now that would be very difficult. But that I could sort of, I don't want to say convince myself, because I'm not going to pretend that I was totally deluded. I thought I could make that call because of her history, that she would be in a very eminent period that would be subjectively difficult and that she would probably run into major problems over the next few years and only end up having one term. And I certainly made that prediction with that sort of assumption based on the technique, but I think it made it easier the fact that that was also the sort of mainstream narrative that most people assumed. And that's why election night, you know, obviously not for everybody, but for, I want to say, a lot of people was so surprising, just because it was much easier for me to adopt that narrative and become complacent in it rather than push harder to do my sort of due diligence in looking at all the charts and crossing all of my dotting all of my I's and crossing all of my T's or what have you, that narrative from the polls and from the sort of public perception of where that election was going, the fact that that seemed to match up with that sort of view I had from looking at those two techniques didn't help, and it did certainly influence things. And so the general point there, just in terms of the long term or the future, is just that sometimes it can be hard to go against the narrative when the narrative seems to match with sort of just the basic assumption that you're making with certain techniques in the astrology. And sometimes it's more impressive when, I mean, that's the reason why in a few instances I will tip my hat off to a few people who did go against the narrative and predicted that Trump will win if they did a good job. And if it's clear that the techniques that they were using, that they were doing that because of the astrology rather than due to their political views, that's when you have a truly impressive prediction. And in the same way that sometimes if the assumption is that like the incumbent is going to win and then all the astrologers predict that the incumbent is going to win, that's not always as impressive as if, you know, the polls or something is saying one thing, but then the astrologer or a lone astrologer predicts something else. There is a certain amount of impressiveness to that, as long as that was coming from the astrology rather than from the person's personal beliefs. And, you know, it really varies from person to person. And that's something that I ran into during the 2012 election when I put together this roundup of the 60 or 70 predictions. And one of the things that I tried to institute when I was presenting those predictions is I tried to create a ranking system that to sort of rank the predictions based on different factors. So here are some of the ranking things that I took into account. And I'm going to mention this just because I think we need to be doing more of these types of sort of meta-analysis of predictions in the community. But we also need to rank them because you can't always just take a prediction as at face value. Not all predictions are necessarily the same. So here are some of the ranking points that I took into account in my meta-analysis of the 2012 election. So the first one was the prominence of the prediction in the mainstream media, either by being featured or cited in a news story or in an interview. So the general point there was the more prominent the prediction, the higher of a rank I would give it. So it's like the difference there is, you know, if somebody makes a prediction and then it ends up in like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or something like that, then that's more notable than a prediction that somebody posts on like, if somebody like sends a private Facebook message to a friend of theirs and says, I predict such and such will happen, and they do it privately like that, or if somebody just writes a short post on their blog and nobody ever sees it, I rank those differently because there's a sort of intent and a sort of effort involved in having something featured more widely and being more prominent than if it's something that's more private and the person is not pushing to be as public. Other than that, the prominence of the prediction in the astrological community, either by being featured in an astrological publication or at an astrological venue, such as a conference. So, you know, actually, instead of just like publishing a prediction on your own blog or something like that, getting it published in a magazine or giving a lecture on that topic or being on a panel like I was, for example, that, again, it's a difference of intent in terms of how forward and how certain are you about this prediction that you want to put your sort of name on the line in order to put it out there strongly versus how much are you kind of hedging a little bit by, you know, putting it out there, but not too much. Other things, how eminent or well-known the astrologer is who made the prediction, either inside or outside of the astrological community, which is pretty straightforward. It's like if Rob Hand makes a prediction, then that's different than if, you know, my friend Bob from Facebook makes a prediction that nobody knows. How standard are the techniques that the person's using versus are they using non-standard techniques that are unique to the astrologer? So that one's a little bit tricky when it gets to different traditions, because sometimes different traditions have different techniques that are specialized to them. But within those traditions, those are like mainstay or staple techniques. I brought that up because in the 2012 analysis, it was like, there's some techniques that, you know, are pretty standard in modern astrology, like transits or like secondary progressions, whereas there's other stuff that can be a little bit weirder or a little bit non-standard. And sometimes I would run into an astrologer who's doing like super, super idiosyncratic, non-standard type astrology, so that it was almost like their own system that no one else besides that person ever used. And so I would have a tendency to rank that lower if they were using something that was so highly non-standard or highly idiosyncratic that it wasn't something that other people could even analyze in terms of whether it was valid or not, or whether it was something that other astrologers had used in the past as a valid technique. The next ranking factor when I was gathering together all of those predictions in 2012 was how thoroughly the astrologer appears to have researched their prediction. So it was like, did they do a lot of research? Did they put a lot into this? And did they put together a pretty comprehensive looking write-up or presentation? Or did it look like something that the person just sort of threw together and didn't put much work into or much effort into? You know, does the person know, for example, that that election day was on November 8th this year, or did they accidentally base their prediction on election day being on like December 2nd or something like that, at which point you might question whether the person actually prepared for this very, very well. Did they research the candidate's backgrounds, or did they research other mundane factors that they're basing their prediction on or talking about thoroughly, or how thoroughly did they do that? I mean, this is one of the ones where you could say that, and this is one of the ones where I've criticized myself in this episode for researching this prediction less than I did in the 2012 prediction and putting less emphasis onto it. But even sort of what I did here, there's other astrologers that have done even less research or less preparation for it and still issued predictions and put them out there. And I don't necessarily think if a person does minimal or almost no research for their prediction and they just throw it out based on like one or two factors, I think that should be ranked lower in terms of the final tally of predictions than one that seemed to have been more thoroughly researched. Other than that, let's see other factors. How far in advance was the prediction issued prior to election day? Again, that's another one where I would dock myself points in this one, because the prediction wasn't even made until the presidential panel took place in October, which is like a month out before election day. Whereas in 2012, we made sure that we issued it pretty far ahead of time. As soon as we knew for sure who the two primary candidates would be Obama and Romney in 2012. So we issued our prediction in late April of 2012 before the November election. Whereas in this election, the panelists issued their predictions in mid-October of 2016, about a month or less before election day. Other predictions, how detailed was the write-up for the prediction, and how much research that they based their prediction on did they actually share? So did they actually outline everything clearly in terms of what their methodology was ahead of time, or did they just focus on the prediction itself without outlining the methodology? This is an issue with, again, this is another area where the ESAR panels really messed up, because especially on the second panel, so we were supposed to have 2 8-minute periods in order to present our predictions. And the first 4 minutes was supposed to be presenting our traditions and what techniques we would be using and everything else. And then the second 4 minutes was supposed to be presenting what the technique says and then presenting our prediction about it. So that was interesting to me, and that's part of the reason why I accepted to do the panel, because initially the way it was pitched and the way it was done in 2012 was it was going to be more of not just getting up there and making some statement about who's going to win, but there was actually going to be a presentation of different traditions and different astrologers who use different approaches and different techniques, kind of outlining their techniques and their methodology to the astrological community and then making their prediction, and there being something useful about that, not just in terms of the, you know, process of making a prediction and like attempting to get media coverage for it or whatever, but just for the actual process of doing astrological research and different traditions sort of coming together and sharing the results. So that kind of got axed basically at the last minute when they cut out they cut our time in half. And instead of having 2 4-minute segments, we just had 1 4-minute segment where we had to say everything. And that's pretty much the only chance I got a chance to talk on that panel was literally opening up as the very first panelist in the first 4 minutes, and outlining things very quickly and very basically. So, of course, I also decided, because I knew that going into it, to devote my 75-minute ESAR lecture to that technique of zodiac releasing, so I could at least present one of the techniques that I was using, and then to outline what my methodology was in that lecture. But nonetheless, that's another one where I'd have to dock myself points for, because if I was more committed to and more engaged in this sort of election and doing it the right way as I had done in 2012, then I should have issued my actual prediction way back in like April or something, when it became clear who for sure the two primary candidates would be. But that's just another sort of instance of how this is really not something I was focused on most of the year. But nonetheless, I think that this criteria is important in terms of ranking predictions and how high they should be ranked in terms of how seriously people should be taking them. And then just 2 more points. One of them was how clearly the astrologer stated their prediction as opposed to either being unclear or hedging. This is something that I saw a bit of in the 2012 election, to the extent that I actually had to create a separate category for a few astrologers who were either so unclear or hedged so much that I wasn't even going to put them in having predicted one or the other candidate, because they clearly were either completely inconclusive or they were trying to straddle both sides so much that it would have been wrong to say that they actually did predict the outcome for the presidential election, regardless of who won. So there's a little bit of an issue with that in this instance, where I've noticed that there was some hedging from some astrologers that I saw, where they sort of, there was at least one astrologer where they said one thing at one point and then later sort of tried to imply or sort of tried to say something different. And now in retrospect, they seem like they may be trying to take credit for the correct statement that they made and not necessarily owning up to the incorrect statement. And there's something a little bit off about that has me a little bit annoyed. But that's something that I think, just as a general principle, people should pay attention to when they're analyzing the success or failure of predictions, and when they're ranking predictions ahead of time in terms of ones that you should take more seriously or less seriously. And just in terms of good practice, in terms of making predictions in general. So finally, the final point that I had here in this list back in 2012. So this is still up in the political astrology blog at this point. The article is titled "Astrologers Predict the 2012 Election Roundup." So the final point was how neutral or how nonpartisan the astrologer appears to be in making their prediction. And like I said, in the 2012 roundup, there are at least 2 astrologers who their sort of statements and their predictions were so tied up in just, you know, political statements about their preference for or their distaste for certain candidates, that it was obvious that these were not sort of neutral or nonpartisan predictions, that they were instead just, you know, people that had very strong political opinions that were making a prediction that had very little to do with the astrology. So one of my issues, and I know there's going to be a lot of accusations just about astrologers having done that in this one with so many predicting Hillary, which I guess I've already covered and explained that there's some issues with that. But one of the things I will say, and one of the things I do say sometimes in terms of that, is while this isn't true for most astrologers, I would hope that most astrologers would be more concerned about making a public prediction that's accurate and the sort of implications that has for their career and their sort of reputation in their field or their reputation with the public, that they would be more concerned about that than they are about, you know, making a prediction that matches or is in accord with their personal political preferences. So while it's true that doesn't always happen and there's issues with that within the astrological community, in my mind, or at least for me, and in terms of my motivations, that's what's more important for me. Because if I didn't do that, you know, then you end up with instances where if you predict just based on who you want to win, then you might end up being wrong if you're ignoring what the astrology actually says. Yeah, so, and that's just a general thing. So, anyway, so back to my list of the final sort of points. Watching the reactions of some astrologers has been interesting. One completely unrelated point is that watching the reactions of some astrologers has been interesting immediately after the election. I mean, some people I noticed pretty immediately were sort of mad specifically at the ESAR panelists in particular, presumably since that group got the most attention of any of the most recently for their predictions and in terms of press coverage and everything else. And because both panels unanimously predicted that Hillary would win, both the international panel at the beginning of the conference of I think five astrologers and the closing panel at the end. So one of the things that people have said, and one of the accusations that's being made that goes along with that, is the idea that sort of like, you know, thanks a lot, guys, for making us all look like idiots or for representing the astrological community poorly because you all got the prediction wrong. And it's interesting for me being in that position or being on the other side of that fence in this instance, because, you know, I'm actually normally, I think anyone who's listened to this podcast long enough will know that I'm normally the first of many people to be overly concerned about astrology's PR problems and, you know, being sort of deeply concerned about, but also just deeply aware of how bad something like this looks or could look in terms of how the general public views astrology. So that's not something I'm unsympathetic to in terms of that criticism and that being directed towards either the ESAR panelists or towards astrologers in general who ventured to make a prediction at this point. Especially, you know, one of the other criticisms was making the prediction based on not very stable data, especially, for example, with Hillary, where her true birth time is unknown, and some of us then who used the birth charts based it on a speculative time. And in retrospect now, it does look like that, you know, either that was a terrible move to make that was probably unwise and not recommended on my part, or either that because I got it wrong, or even if I got the right chart, you know, it may have been misinterpreted, but nonetheless, as a sort of general practice, it was probably a bad idea to use a rectified chart to base that sort of prediction on. I mean, we are going to have a question in the future of can any, you know, if we run into elections where there's no birth charts for anybody, or at least let's say birth times, what do we do and are any predictions made? But I mean, that's sort of besides the point. Anyways, back to the point about astrology's PR. Usually I would be the first one to be sort of on the bandwagon about that. But in reflecting about it this week, one of the things that I will say is one of the sort of silver linings that I will put out there. I don't think this is the complete answer, but it's something that at least has given me a little bit of solace given some of my feelings about political astrology over the past few years, especially given part of the reason why I publicly announced that I was getting out of it in 2014. Part of the silver lining here is that all of us getting it wrong so publicly in this election, one of the sort of positive side effects of that, one could argue, is that politicians potentially will continue to not take astrology seriously. Which arguably, when it comes to politicians, I think one could argue would be more of a positive thing rather than a negative thing. And this is something I was talking to Austin about the other night, and he referred to this as like astrology having this sort of twilight role in society. And it's something I've talked with Demetra George about a lot, because this is something that she really argues very strongly as well. And I always felt ambivalent about, but when it came to political astrology, I'd sort of come around to over the past few years this notion that astrology, you know, plays this weird in-between role in society where it's not really it's opposed by a lot of different groups. It's opposed typically by religious groups. It's opposed by scientific groups. So it's neither endorsed by religion nor science. Politicians sometimes historically have taken it seriously, but typically in those periods in which they do, as I said at the beginning of this episode, when they do, they usually either try to use it to manipulate or use it for propaganda, or they try to suppress it because then it's not something where you can control the message or the narrative sometimes. In either instance, historically, there have been different periods in history where astrology and politics coming together has not worked out very well for the astrologers, and sometimes has led to, you know, astrology getting outlawed or getting banned or astrologers getting in serious problems and getting their books burned. So, my point here is just that, on some level, while this might sound like an excuse on my part, if you go back and listen to my ESAR 2014 lecture, you'll hear me basically saying the same thing, which is expressing concerns about if politicians do start taking astrology more seriously, that it's probably not going to be good for the astrological community, and explaining that that's basically part of the reason why I'm going to stay out of the 2016 election, which I then went back on and unfortunately didn't do. So the only thing I'll say is that there may be some, while I generally apologize, you know, myself genuinely for to whatever extent this reflects negatively on the astrological community, I will say that there's some small piece in terms of my own personal opinion where this makes me sort of breathe a sigh of relief slightly more, because if it was the opposite end of the spectrum, if you imagine all of the astrologers had gotten it correct, all of the pollsters had been wrong, while that is the ideal scenario that we all kind of dream of and we all kind of assume is possible, and on many levels should have happened if things were cleaner in this election and we were just working with very straight, unambiguous birth times, you know, sort of like we were in the 2012 election, where we just had birth records for both of them. You know, while that's a great ideal, and it would have looked really good for a brief period of time as a sort of historical moment and as a touchstone where, like, all the astrologers got it right and everybody else in the world got it wrong, the flip side of that coin would have been that in 4 years, in like the 2020 election, you would have seen a lot of propaganda pieces being written using astrology. You would have seen a lot of astrologers working for different political campaigns in order to push different narratives and in order to push different things, some of which, you know, you might personally believe in and other things you might strongly not believe in. I mean, you would have seen a lot of different ways in which astrology would have gotten perverted and used in ways that you otherwise might not think are so great. So in terms of just like trying to have like some optimism over what is otherwise clearly like a sort of abysmal failure on the part of the community and a sort of mishap or disaster that's very embarrassing, I at least want to put some optimistic or slightly positive note on that in terms of one silver lining that might be good. And I could keep talking about that and go into that a little bit more in terms of my thoughts on that, but I think that's sufficient for now, especially since this is turning into an extremely long episode. So, other silver linings. One of the really funny silver linings, sort of learning lessons for me that was really hilarious over the past week in a kind of depressing way, is that my transits slash astrology right now, especially on election day, was pretty amazing. And that's interesting to me, amazing in a really bad way, where it looked like I was having really terrible transits at that time. And this is something I noticed months ago, but I sort of thought to myself, I was like, surely that doesn't mean I'm going to get it wrong. The fact that I have terrible transits that are going to go exact right about the time that the decision about the outcome of the election becomes known. And I was sort of like, surely that's not it. But here's what it was. So my birthday was on November 1st, so it was about a week before Election Day, and I switched into a ninth house perfection year. So my ninth house started to be active for the entirety of this year. And the ninth house, of course, has always traditionally been associated with astrology and with divination, but also with just the general process of sort of forecasting and prophecy and prediction in general. So one of the things that's interesting about that is my ninth house in whole sign houses is ruled by Libra gets activated. So my ninth house is ruled by Venus, which natally is placed at 15 degrees and 20 minutes of Sagittarius. And what planet, of course, clicked over and moved into exactly 15 degrees of 20 and 20 minutes of Sagittarius on Wednesday, November 9th, right when the outcome of the presidential election became known to everybody, it was Saturn. So Saturn moved into 15 degrees and 20 minutes of Sagittarius exactly on Wednesday the 9th in the immediate aftermath of the election, within hours of the outcome becoming known, and it exactly conjoined the ruler of the year for me, which is the most important planet over the course of this year. And suddenly I'm having a really not great Saturn transit to the ruler of my ninth house of astrology and prediction and prophecy and everything else. So there were a couple of other sort of transits that were interesting as well. Of course, one of the ones that everybody was paying attention to on Tuesday night was that Mars was going to ingress into Aquarius on election night. So it had been in Capricorn for a while, and then it was going to move into Aquarius later that night around midnight, everybody knew. And when the election itself became really tense in terms of like the electoral college votes started rolling in and it started tending towards Trump later in the night, more and more, there kept being this question of whether, you know, a lot of my friends on Facebook, a lot of my liberal friends were all hoping that as soon as Mars went into Aquarius, that suddenly the momentum would shift and that Hillary would suddenly like come from behind and like still win somehow, even though it kept looking worse and worse for her. But instead, what happened is that Mars ingressed into Aquarius, and then not too long after that, basically within an hour or two, I think the election ended up being called for Trump, or at least it became fully clear that Trump had won the election. So that Mars ingress is interesting, of course. It's interesting in terms of the candidates. I mean, it ingressed into different houses depending on what charts they had, of course. And that's always been one of my arguments for whole sign houses, is that sometimes when a planet ingresses into a new sign, you can see this immediate shift of energy sometimes into the sphere of life or the area of life indicated by that house. And sometimes, you know, if it's a difficult planet, that can just indicate negative things in general becoming more prominent in that area of the life for the person. So anyways, one of the things that was just funny about that is, you know, I have Aquarius rising. So Mars ingressed into Aquarius and into my first whole sign house the night of the presidential election, as we're basically watching the returns come in, and then suddenly it becomes clear that, you know, I messed up the prediction. So I had those two negative transits. And then on top of that, I guess like the next day on Wednesday, Saturn, or the natal transiting sun exactly conjoined my natal Saturn. So the interesting takeaway from that I thought was kind of informative, and even if, you know, I got it wrong and it's otherwise very very sort of depressing and embarrassing or what have you, one of the interesting things is just the prospect or the idea that sometimes you might be able to tell when an astrologer is going to predict incorrectly. And there is actually some precedent for this in some Indian and Hellenistic texts, especially in Indian astrology. They actually have a sort of system, I think, to some extent for this, for being able to know, I think, both sometimes when in general the person's judgment might not be that good, but also specific periods when the person might have not good judgments about making predictions or doing divination or what have you. But this is one of the first times that I've actually seen that happen really blatantly, like in front of me in my own chart, and been able to feel it in this very sort of visceral way in the sort of surprise of election day that happened on Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, with transiting Saturn exactly conjoining the Lord of the Year that day. So there's other things related to that, but I'll just leave it. I've already made the point, I think, about there's some cool stuff in secondary progressions that I'm just now hearing. Anthony Lewis pointed out that Hillary Clinton's progressed Sun and Mercury exactly conjoined in October, so she had a progressed Mercury Kazemi in mid-October if the Scorpio rising chart is correct, whereas if the 8 p.m. chart is correct, then it would have been earlier this year in April when she was locking up the primary. There's a bunch of cool secondary progressed things that I didn't really look into prior to this election, and that's one thing, as I said, that this election has done is it's given me, sort of reignited my interest in at least checking out secondary progressions every once in a while. Yeah, because there was some cool stuff like that. I also noticed, I don't know if anyone else has pointed this out, but that Trump's charts, his secondary progress chart basically looks like Bill Clinton's chart at this point, which is kind of weird. And then, of course, the whole thing about Trump's secondary progress sun conjoining his ascendant is all very interesting, and I'm sure there's many other points like that. Let's see, final point that I wanted to get to before I close this down. There needs to be more sort of meta-analysis of community predictions. So I did mine in 2012, and I couldn't find any earlier instances of that, so I don't know if it's really been done before. For this election, obviously, I didn't do it again, and so that's part of my hesitation to and inability to do a full meta-analysis of what happened and what went wrong with this election, is that I didn't personally collect those predictions ahead of time like I did in 2012. However, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, Scottish astrologer Mark Cullen did do a roundup of predictions, and he's done the only roundup of predictions that I know of this year. He posted it. He's been updating it. He updated it just a couple of days ago in a thread on the Skyscript forums. So that's at skyscript.co.uk in their forum section. And then in the mundane section of the forum, you should be able to find a locked thread that has Mark's sort of roundup of presidential predictions. And I think I'll probably link to it in the description page for this episode. So I think that's really important for a number of different reasons. Obviously, you know, it keeps us honest and it provides a running sort of track of like who got it right and who got it wrong, which I think is useful on a number of different levels. It also helps us to understand what techniques are being used in the community, and it helps us to study those techniques and see how they're being used and sometimes have data on, you know, how well they're working, but also sometimes when certain ways that they're being applied, if they weren't used correctly, or if there's a way that it could have been done better, being able to study the track records of different astrologers is really helpful. So my hat's off to Mark for doing that this year. I mean, that's really something that, you know, if any of these astrological organizations actually did astrological research, despite that being their namesake, then they should be doing something like that already and actually funding research like that in order to collect different predictions by astrologers so that we could sort of grow and learn from them as a community. Not necessarily as a, you know, the purpose of my roundup 4 years ago was not like to shame anyone, or I felt bad that some people were like deleting their predictions afterwards due to embarrassment or whatever. And I understand why they did that. And that's really not the point. The point is just to sort of grow and learn as a community by looking at our past history. And unless we collect that history and document it, then we can't do that. And we can't have that process of like introspection and self-reflection. So that's part of what I'm doing with this episode, or what I hope to have accomplished. I would definitely recommend checking out Mark's. I don't know if he's going to do, I think he's going to do a write-up about it at some point. I do wish that he had applied something like a ranking system to it, and that there had been more details surrounding the predictions like I did in 2012. And I'm a little bit cautious about, you know, how some of those predictions are going to be interpreted because they're not ranked as a result of that. And I think that without some of that ranking and some of that sorting in order to gauge, you know, the predictions that were that somebody put a lot more effort into versus the predictions that were just kind of blow off predictions that somebody posted in an afternoon or something on their blog. I think without that sort of distinguishing between those, there's a little bit less value to it, but or usefulness, and there's the potential for some not great conclusions to be drawn from it, for people to draw the wrong conclusion. But nonetheless, I think it's a great community thing that he did, and I fully support and recommend that people check it out. So thanks to Mark for doing that. All right. Well, I think that brings me to the end of this episode. Let's see, final words. Remember, I meant to mention I'm going to be recording an addendum to my ZR lecture, and I'll send it to those who bought it. So keep an eye out for that. What else? Yeah, I think that's it. So I hope that I've outlined everything clearly. I hope I've explained where I was coming from and what my shortcomings were. You know, one of my immediate reactions to this, it was funny that I got into this election, of course, after I stopped writing the political astrology blog and after I gave the lecture at ESAR saying in 2014 that I was retiring from political astrology and wasn't going to do it again. It's funny that I, you know, got back into it and got it wrong, partially because I thought it was going to be easier, and because the sort of surface level of the technique seemed to be more straightforward in terms of what I thought was going to be a win for her, and that seemed to match the trends of where it was going, it seemed like it was going to be an easy sort of call, and then I could just get out of doing political astrology. So it's ironic, and that it would like look good on my resume or something like that. And so it's ironic now in retrospect that it's in fact the exact opposite. And I'm now sort of one for one with having gotten the last election in 2012 and having totally missed this one in 2016. So, I mean, I'm still back to where I was previously in 2014 in terms of probably not getting back into political astrology. And this not being something that I'm going to be like doing publicly in the future, if I have any good sense. I mean, I'm hoping that in like 3 or 4 years that I don't suddenly get the urge to like vindicate myself by like coming back and getting it right next time. Because while that would be nice on a sort of personal level, I think the downsides that would come along with that in terms of some of the concerns I had about astrologers being involved in politics should probably outweigh everything else. Nonetheless, I hope that this review of what happened and where I went wrong with my techniques and my methodology is useful to other people who do want to look into astrology and politics, even if they just want to do that personally for themselves or personally in terms of, you know, improving their own techniques and approach to astrology to sort of learn from my mistakes. And that's, I think, really the primary thing that I wanted to do with this episode. In addition to just, you know, sort of coming clean and being open about what happened and sort of owning it and putting it out there. So I hope other people are able to learn from that, and it will help you to become better astrologers and help us as a community to, you know, become better collectively. So, all right. I think that's a good point to end on. I'll probably remember something else later that I forgot to include, but I think 3.5 hours is a sufficiently long podcast episode. So for anybody who listened to this, thanks for listening. Thanks for bearing with me. Thanks for, you know, listening through this entire series of election episodes over the past few months. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.